Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 9th of February, 1996.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening on a Friday night, Saturday morning. I'm Art Bell here live, and if not fully well, with a bit of a twinge in my back, better than I was toward the end of the show yesterday. Good morning. It's good to have you. Good to be here. We have got a guest coming up this morning. He is a currency historian, an economist. I guess he'll say currency historian, but he is prepared to speak about the economy and the new money and that kind of stuff. And so we're going to get to all of that in a moment. His name is Andrew Gause, and I think you're going to enjoy him very much. There have been so many currency questions lately that I felt it was time that we had somebody who would know what they're talking about on the air. And we'll go investigating in many areas, and I'll outline a few of those in a moment. So let me take care of some business. This will be sort of a freelance night. We'll guest for a while, then we'll open lines for a while, that kind of thing. So get ready, folks, for Here It Comes. Currency historian Andrew Gause is a nationally recognized authority on the U.S. monetary system. Oh, you're going to like this. A member of the Industry Council for Tangible Assets and life member of the American Numismatic Association. That's collectible coins. Mr. Gause has been an invited guest on more than 450 radio and TV programs, where he has spoken on a wide range of financial and political issues. A regular guest on Washington, D.C.'s Blanquita Coulomb Show, BQView, I've never heard of that one, and recently featured on PBS TV's Tony Brown Journal, Mr. Gause strives to alert listeners about how throughout our nation's history, America's monetary policy has been shaped and controlled not by elected officials, but by private vested interests. Mr. Gause was recently invited to speak to a gathering of state and federal officials in Ogden, Utah, where he addressed the problem of our national debt. Oh, we'll talk about that. Outlined a program of monetary reform based on a return to constitutional public treasury system. Many of his lectures are now available on audio tape, including The Definition of Money, The Bill of Rights, The Federal Reserve, and on and on and on. A lot of things you're going to want to talk about. The truth about money. Megaflation 2000. The ravages of inflation. Denominating your wealth. That sounds interesting. And so there are a great, great range of topics. And here he comes from way back east, where I suspect he had to set an alarm to get up. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, I am. It's a pleasure to be here as well.
Well, I'm glad to have you. I have a lot of... I am personally confused. I fancy myself as an amateur economist in a way, and I thought I understood the way things worked, and every time I think I do, I realize how wrong I am. Right now, the stock market is hitting daily new highs. What are we, around 55-something or another?
That's correct.
And I always thought that when times were good and the stock market was booming, people put their money there.
That's right.
All right. The economy may be okay. It doesn't seem to me that it's ragingly good. The Christmas season was bad. People are not feeling particularly comfortable about keeping their jobs. That's a fair economy, I guess, but it's not great. And so the stock market is going up and the price of gold has gone up precipitously. You don't have the latest figures on that, do you?
Gold closed today at 407.80.
407.80. Well, it was 385 not very long ago.
That's right.
So people are doing both at the same time. They're jumping into the market because of low interest rates, that's what I see on the one hand. But on the other hand, people are rushing to safety gold. What's going on?
Well, basically what's going on, Art, is we don't have a closed-sum game. And the reason for the run-up in gold and the reason for the run-up in the stock market is all this fresh money that came into the market as a result of Treasury Secretary Rubin's shenanigans by taking the money from the civil service trust funds and converting it into instant money, M1.
Is that legal?
Well, yes.
It is legal. I mean, there are Republicans talking about impeaching him.
Well, they're talking to the wrong guy, see, because as the Secretary of the Treasury, his actions were proper and prudent. In other words, he acted to save the Treasury of the United States. But as the trustee of the Government Employees Trust Fund, to my mind, he breached his fiduciary responsibility as a trustee of that fund. Mm-hmm. He allowed the fund to be effectively looted.
Mm-hmm.
He took an IOU from a deadbeat, effectively. If in fact, the nation is on the brink of default and his action was taken simply to avoid default, then wasn't he breaching his fiduciary responsibility as the trustee of the trust fund?
I suppose you could argue his larger responsibility was to see to it that it didn't go into default for as long as he could. I guess he's in trouble either way.
Oh, he absolutely is. What most people don't realize is that the majority of the money in this nation is not in the form of cash or in the form of demand deposits at the bank, but it's in the form of long-term treasury obligations that have anywhere from an 18-month to a 30-year maturity.
All right, this is what we call the national debt, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
In other words, that's how the national debt is financed. We've got to start, for many people, from the beginning. There are a lot of people out there who don't know the difference between the deficit and the debt and how the debt is financed, and I will have people call up on talk shows, and they will say that the whole debt is a mirage. We don't really owe anybody anything. Why don't we just declare it persona non grata and say it's now zero? Well, we really can't do that, can we?
Well, that's right, because what has happened is, over the years, the government of the United States has convinced we the people, through various maneuvers, to establish different trust funds. Now, there's some 170 different trust funds that we've established as we the people, for various things, from fixing our roads, to building new airports, to our Medicaid trust fund, and our Social Security trust funds, and our government employees retirement funds. You have almost $3 trillion of hard-earned money. I'm not talking about pie-in-the-sky money, because each week, when you see those deductions come out of your paycheck, that's current money that you just earned. And it's remitted right into a big bucket, effectively, because it's not segregated into the trust funds. What happens is, the government takes all the money that comes into the trust funds every day, and they replace it with IOUs, treasury bonds. So $3 trillion of the national debt is owed to trust funds that are earmarked for various things. Now, if you look, for example, at the Highway Trust Fund, first of all, the condition of our roads is deplorable, but
yes, it is.
There's $160 billion sitting in the Highway Trust Fund. Why can't we fix our roads? Because it's $160 billion in IOUs, in treasury bonds. And until they mature, the money's just not there. So although that's where those people that tell you that this whole national debt is a mirage, that's where they get it from.
IOUs. Yeah, it's very interesting. All IOUs. Well, it has been suggested, there are people out on the fringe who say, look, why don't we mint a $5 or $6 trillion coin? And that will cancel the debt. That's silly, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is silly. It's like the million-pound banknote in the Mark Twain story. You know, the fact of the matter is, however, that we do have a circulating money supply that is made up of $500 billion of notes, paper notes. Now, that's the thing that we call money. So if you reach in your pocket and you read it, it says across the top of it, Federal Reserve note. Now,
indeed.
We could issue $500 billion worth of United States notes to replace those Federal Reserve notes and save about $45 billion a year in interest. Now, that's a prudent plan that can be taken without affecting any current spending programs. The only thing that...
That would circumvent the Fed, correct?
Well, sure, for that portion. But, you know, I'm reading in between the lines with the Fed here, and they've actually made the following statement that we're not as concerned with the paper money supply as we are with the electronic money supply. And I can understand that because the paper money supply, like I said, it's only $500 billion. But the electronic money supply, Art, that's almost $5 trillion. Mm. So as long as we leave them with the power to electronically create money, I think they probably wouldn't squeal too loud if we take the notes back.
All right. While we're on that subject, I recall an interesting statement by John Major in England. And he said we are in extremely dangerous economic times, that literally trillions or $1 trillion or more could change hands electronically across the world, flashing across the world overnight.
That's right.
And he hinted that there could be an overnight disaster one of these days.
That's right. That's what worries me right now. We're on the brink of disaster in terms of our financial system, and what troubles me is that most Americans that I talk to have their money tied up in these IOUs. Either that or they're giving it to a fund to invest in whatever the fund sees fit. The amount of American assets pouring into mutual funds has been breaking records right along with the Dow.
Mm-hmm.
Until people get a little afraid, I don't think they're going to take any steps at all to protect themselves. Just about everyone is paper-based, chasing those paper profits.
Yeah, how far away from that? The realization of that fear collectively, do you think we might be? I always wonder about that. It's like a light bulb goes on, and all of a sudden people say, uh-oh, and everybody's worried at once.
Yes, that's right. Well, this increase in the debt ceiling, okay?
Yes.
If it would have just been proposed straight and clean, an increase in the debt ceiling to $5.5 trillion, I think that would have been enough to set the world on its ear. They would have just raised their eyebrow at that. So by going through these machinations, we're able to wind up in that location with a debt ceiling increase of $500 billion, and no one is any more concerned. As a matter of fact, most people are breathing a sigh of relief that we're going to come to an agreement.
Well, isn't it a pay me now or pay me later thing? In other words, yeah, sure, we're going to raise the debt ceiling, and that'll put it off a while longer. Assuming people go out and buy the bonds.
Well, that's right.
And so it'll put the whole thing off. But at some point, even a layman looking at the numbers knows that it's going to crash and burn.
Well, it's inflationary is what it is. What the Congress is saying to the people, what the people should understand, is that the Congress is saying, we want to raise the debt ceiling to $5.5 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to print $500 billion worth of bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Federal Reserve, if necessary, will create $500 billion in order to buy those bonds. So, there's no shortage of money. There's no crowding out effect. There's actually an increase in the supply of money. And proportionately, you know, one man in 100 can't figure it out. They can't diagnose what's going on. By increasing the money supply 10%, you're going to decrease the value of the dollar by 10%.
By that same amount, sure.
That's right. And mm-hmm. But it won't happen overnight. And by the time the effects are felt, Art, you know, the people that are responsible for it, they'll be retired spending their excess campaign contributions.
If you had to make a wild guess, and they always do come in and save it and manipulate, where will the smoke and mirrors and capability to manipulate any longer simply, under the best of circumstances, no longer be possible?
I see it coming in the next 6 to 12 months.
Wow.
On the basis of, figure this out, as Ross Perot so adroitly pointed out in the campaign of 92, fully 80% of our total debt was due and payable within 5 years.
Right.
Now, the number of Treasury bond auctions scheduled for the coming 3 months is absolutely staggering. I was watching during the third leg of the refunding yesterday when they were selling the 30-year bonds.
There was moderate interest. They called it a moderate interest in the bonds, and so they were happy about that, and they say that's why the market went up. Would you agree with that?
There was tremendous arm twisting to buy that issue of bonds. Yes, I would agree with that.
I see.
I will say that the announcers on the financial news channels were amazed at the quantity of the debt that is being brought to market. They just never before in the history of this republic has this quantity of debt been brought to the market, and it's going to affect one or two things. Either A, the federal government will crowd out all the private borrowers, thereby driving interest rates up, which in an election year is not going to happen. Or B, the more likely scenario is they will simply create whatever supply of money is necessary to pay all this impending debt, and it will seem like there's no problem because, Art, you know, all that freshly created money's got to go somewhere. It'll go into the stock market. It'll go into gold. It'll go into real estate, and it'll lead to a general euphoria. I mean, you can track this back in history from the founding of the Federal Reserve. I hate to think of the implications of a roaring summer economy, a roaring economy into the election, a roaring Dow, you know, jobs everywhere, plenty of money everywhere, plenty of money that you can borrow, low interest rates.
Oh, yes.
Who do you think is going to get reelected?
Well, I already know that.
It just breaks my heart, but the Federal Reserve and the current administration, or the Federal Reserve and the administration that they choose, work hand in hand with each other. The Fed cooperates with the president if they want to get him reelected. And in this case, Alan Greenspan's coming up for renomination next month.
Correct.
He wants to keep his job. It's a great job.
I'm sure it is. So he's going to perhaps even lower interest rates again, you would guess?
Another quarter to a half a point.
Boy, that'll light the fires, won't it?
Absolutely, it will. And the recent interest rate drop should show the fire being lit in the stock market. And the real estate market's starting to stir. Unemployment is down. You're going to see a roaring, booming economy. The problem is that the person who already has amassed a pile of dollars and plans on getting through the next 5 years without losing purchasing power had really better wake up, especially if those dollars are stored in fixed return investments like bonds.
All right, so we are like, out here, we are like the lobsters in the slowly heating, soon to be boiling water.
That's right.
And we really don't know what's happening to us.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, sure. In other words, our purchasing power is being eroded to support or to lengthen the date at which there's going to be some sort of collapse.
That's right. And I'll tell you who it's pitting, the husbands against the wives. You know, it's like every week my wife says, I got her hand out for a few more dollars, brings home the same amount of groceries, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, if I didn't know better, I'd be mad at her. Well, you know, how are you wasting this money? I'm giving you the same money I've been giving you for the last 5 months. How come you're bringing home less groceries every week? You must be stopping off at the bingo parlor. So this perception, this, you know, you don't know who to point your finger at. It harkens back to the Gerry Ford administration when he used to wear that button, whip inflation now.
I remember, yes.
Yeah, whip inflation now, as though he didn't understand what it was, or as though we, the people, could do something about it. It's the Federal Reserve banks, plain and simple, they get to decide the volume of money. And, you know, whoever controls the volume of money really controls the country.
Well, there are many profound arguments about this, and I am not necessarily a detractor of the feds. In other words, constitutionally, only Congress should be minting money and controlling the supply of money. But when you consider the alternative to the Fed, in other words, I'm kind of a supporter of the Fed, and that gets me in a lot of trouble, in the sense that if we were to go back to our constitutional way of doing things, putting the money supply, interest rate adjustment, all the rest of that that the Fed now does, into the hands of the people who are doing the unrestrained spending would just simply hasten the end date, as far as I'm concerned.
Actually, what it would do is it would force prudence on them, because they would see, the Fed enables the Congress to spend our children's money and our grandchildren's money. Mm-hmm. If Congress did not have the ability to issue bonds, but only had the ability to issue notes, then the notes that it issued would cause the inflation that would get Congress thrown out instantly.
In other words, they'd commit suicide.
Exactly. And that's the way our forefathers intended. In other words, okay, you're the wise congressman. If you're going to authorize the creation of twice as much money as there currently exists,
mm-hmm.
then the inflation is going to be felt on your watch. We're not going to allow you to issue bonds and then sell the bonds to the, you know, think about it, a bank that creates the money to buy the bonds. So that locks in the children and the grandchildren to the debt.
Sure.
They don't have a voice in it. And the political implications of creating that debt are not felt for 10 or 20 years.
All right. So in other words, that's going on. Realistically, even though you might like it to occur, there is not going to be a change. We are going
to
obviously go on as we are. Now,
that's right.
That is going to produce a very predictable result. We
inflation,
just talked about it.
Yeah, very predictable. people.
And eventually some kind of crash. And what I want to talk to you about is what would occur if it all came apart. And also, of course, the coming debt ceiling hike, which is not exactly guaranteed. It is not going to be a clean hike. And if it's unclean enough, the president might even choose to veto it, and then we could be in default. And I would like to know, when we come back from the break, what would happen if we actually went into default? The unthinkable. Andrew Gause is my guest, and we shall consider the unthinkable after the break. Stay right there.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 9th, 1996.
This is nice, soothing music for what's about to be a not very soothing topic. The possibility of the U.S. government actually going into default. They call it the unthinkable. And I suppose it is, in a way. If people began to think it was going to occur, then she'd all come down around our ears right now. We're going to talk about that with Andrew Gause in just a moment. Back now, all the way to the East Coast, and Andrew Gause. Andrew, suppose this is just a what if. I know that we've got a debt ceiling hike coming up, or we face default.
Right.
Now, I think both you and I agree that they're not crazy enough, or maybe smart enough, I don't know which would be the right way to think about it, to allow default to occur. There are some who would argue you might as well let it crash and burn and rise from the ashes like the phoenix and come up with a real system. However, they won't do that. I'm sure we agree on that. They'll do what they are going to call the responsible thing.
I agree with you, yes.
Yeah. But what if? What if the president found not digestible this unclean ceiling hike, and somehow or another the default occurred?
Loss of sovereignty. See, the one thing that those people who say let it crash and burn don't realize, they think we're operating in a vacuum. We're going to let it crash and burn, and then we maintain the jurisdiction over the problem. But the fact of the matter is that if the federal government defaults on its treasury obligations, it will be hauled before the International Court in The Hague and foreclosed upon.
How do you foreclose on the U.S.?
The same way you foreclose on any of the other banana republics that owe more than they take in. You simply get a judgment against a debtor that doesn't pay. And in the case of an international issue, that jurisdiction falls under the World Trade Organization right in The Hague. So you cannot assume that you're going to default on your debt and then not be brought to bear. You know,
but I mean, practically, what would occur practically in the real world? I mean, they're not going to come and start hauling our houses away or our cities.
What would occur is the taxing authority would pass from the Congress to the bailing out institution. Now, I suspect the bailer would be the International Monetary Fund or perhaps the World Bank. But the way that the bailout would occur, for example, is a third party would create world currency units or North American currency units. And they would offer an exchange of these things dollar for dollar. So if you had a dollar on deposit in the banking system, they would exchange it for one of these world trade units. And then your new power of taxation would pass to this new organization, similar to the Mexican bailout. If you look at the Mexican bailout, what did the Mexicans have to do? They had to funnel all of their oil dollars through the New York Federal Reserve Bank in order to get that bailout. So we would be forced to do the same thing. We'd be forced to
giant leap, in other words, toward the one world consolidation.
Well, certainly, if that, you know, if there are there are people out there who firmly believe that this nation is hell bent towards a one world government, and if you believe that, then you should pay particular attention to what would happen in the event of a default, because that would play right into that scenario. Certainly, one of the things you need to have a one world government is one world currency and elimination of trade borders.
So that would be the way our phoenix would rise from the ashes.
That's right. It wouldn't rise up as a free republic with its own monetary autonomy. You know, forget that, because we would be in the court of international law. We would be a debtor nation with a judgment against us, and the creditors could move to enforce those actions up to and including U.N. sanctions. Can you imagine U.N. sanctions?
I can hardly imagine that. No.
Exactly. You know, when we were brought into the UN, it was all tongue in cheek, so to speak. Oh well, we're in the UN and we have voting power and we'll abide by their decisions. But if we don't like what they're doing, wink wink, we'll veto it. And that's why the American people bought our membership in that body. But now, you know, with the World Trade Organization and that loss of sovereignty, who are the sanctions being put against? We the people, we the United States, and that's not what we intended, I'm sure.
I'm sure. My God, that's a frightening scenario.
It certainly is.
So they would eventually come and they would bail us out, as Mexico was, except on a much larger scale, of course. And we would then be in their debt.
That's right.
And they would have the power.
To tax us. That's right. The taxing power. You know, that's it's a good excuse to put like a buck a... You know, of course, it would start very small. You know, well, they're going to bail us out, and it's over 20 years, and we only have to pay a dollar a week or something, you know, something small.
Well, all right. On the day of the default, or if everybody saw it coming as inevitable,
yes.
How would the market react to that?
Well, the door would slam shut. You know, all these people who have mutual funds, who seem to think that it's, you know, you can get in and out very easily, have never tried to get out during a falling market. Everyone in a mutual fund would immediately see their asset value evaporate. If they could get a sell order through, they'd be lucky to come away with half of their money. So effectively, you'll be able to wipe out a big pile of existing monetary values and spread it out wide. Because although it's, you know, 100 or 2 mutual funds, they represent the capital of, you know, 1 million or 2 investors.
Mm-hmm.
So you catch them all in one big net, so to speak. It would be something like, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, the break would have already been felt in Tokyo, you know, at Citibank in New York, they would know that the break is happening, the rest of America's asleep, you'd wake up 9 o'clock in the morning and, the financial markets would be in chaos, the long bond would have tanked 2, 3, maybe 4 points overnight, gold would have shot up in multiples of its trading range and trading
limits. Well, that is the next question, gold. What would happen to gold on that same day as the treasury bonds took a dive and gold began to climb? How high do you think it would climb?
Well, you would see trading limits because, remember, we don't trade gold anymore. The physical possession gold market would shut down instantly because the futures market, the derivatives market, would have reached its limit for the day and would have stopped trading. So the official price of gold will be bogus. And no one who holds physical possession gold will sell at those levels. So what you'll have is the derivatives market relating to gold will collapse, much as the 10 market did. And then the physical possession market that exists after that, and, you know, goodness knows, you have 3.5 times the total supply of gold on the planet today is being risked right now in the derivatives market. So
wow.
That if every trade were settled in the derivatives market, it would take 3.5 times all the gold that is already above the ground.
All right, let me stop you there because I'm not even sure I properly understand derivatives. Now, derivatives, that's very much akin to simple, straight-out gambling is the way I seem to understand it. It's what got Orange County in trouble.
That's right. It's options. Derivatives mean...
Can you explain it?
Yeah, I'll try to. A derivative is something that derives its value not from the item itself, but from the right to trade that item. So that if I said to you, Art, I'm going to give you the right to buy 100 ounces $425.
Uh-huh.
Even if I don't have the 100 ounces of gold, even if you have no intention of buying it, we can gamble on the price of gold.
It's gambling on scenarios, then.
That's right. It's not having physical possession of the item, but rather having a contract that derives its value from the ability to buy that item. So derivatives can be bought on bonds, on stocks, on gold, on commodities of all kinds. And that's, you're right, what got Orange County in trouble, because the treasurer of Orange County figured that interest rates were going to go down,
mm-hmm.
and he bet a bunch of money. He bought the option or the right or the obligation to buy a certain number of bonds at a certain date in the future, and when that date got there, the bonds were worth far less than what he was paying. That's how he lost all that money. So derivatives market in gold means that if the average person today wants to buy gold, he calls up his Merrill Lynch stockbroker, whoever he does business with in stocks, and says, I want to buy gold. And the guy says, well, you can buy the gold fund or the gold stock or the gold options. No, I want the gold bars. Oh, well, we don't deal in the gold bars.
Wouldn't it be just as easy for the people in Orange County to have packed a whole bunch of money into a suitcase and sent the fellow up to Las Vegas?
That's about right. You would have probably gotten the same odds. And if you found a better professional gambler, he might have been more savvy than the treasurer there, who I understand was playing well beyond his depth.
Pretty low, Andrew. But true. I'm sure true. And how did we get into this derivatives business anyway? It seems like a fairly recent invention of somebody's.
Right. The Federal Reserve Bank's Open Market Committee encourages the use of derivatives because they use them to shelter or to hide their financial maneuvers. In other words, if the Federal Reserve Bank of New York decides that interest rates need to go down, and in order to make them go down, they should buy bonds, thereby driving down the price.
Mm-hmm.
They are driving up the price, driving down the yield. They sell or buy derivatives of bonds. They don't want to have to actually load up on bonds. They want to be able to sell options or contracts and affect the market. And the same is true with gold. So I really believe that this entire market developed, this derivatives market, as a way to allow the big boys to manipulate the markets so that the average guy cannot figure out what's going on. If you have a sharp rise in the price of gold, everyone panics. But if through the sale of derivatives, you're able, here's the example. Let's assume everybody tomorrow panics and starts rushing out to buy gold. Normally, the price of gold would skyrocket. But if the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee can sell contracts on gold, thereby filling the demand, filling the supply, and causing the price to stay stable or at least not rise so quick, then they have the whole time that derivative or that option runs to unwind their position. And instead of the price of gold shooting up $100 overnight, it goes up $100 over 3 months, and nobody figures out what's going on. So,
I picture this guy. You've seen jugglers, right?
That's what it is.
I picture this guy juggling like crazy, and every now and then somebody throws in one more orange for him to juggle, right? And one of these days, all of the oranges are going to go flopping on the floor because he just, ran out of gas.
That's probably, though, where you got your admiration for the Federal Reserve, because as you see it as I do, these guys have... they're the best jugglers I've ever seen. And certainly Robert Rubin is the court jester, because this man has more tricks in his hat bag than I've ever seen.
Well, so then it comes down to, what is the average person? That's going to be valuable advice out there. As this juggling act continues, and during it our money keeps being worth less and less and less, what does the average person do to protect themselves? What's the best thing they can do?
Well, the best thing they can do is slowly start moving a portion of their wealth into the tangible markets. You mentioned North American Trading. They're brokers of gold.
That's right.
Numismatic
Gold, yeah.
Exactly. Call them up and say, I want to buy gold and silver coins. Find a broker that deals in lawful issued constitutional gold and silver coins and buy some. I mean, if you're not familiar with the market, familiarize yourself, because we've seen this so many times before that by now it's almost scientific. At that period from 77 to 80, for example, when inflation was raging, saw the average gold coin increase in value by 1,000%.
They should know, by the way, you have no connection whatsoever to North American trading.
Oh, no, I just heard the
yeah,
ad.
Yeah, I know you did. Anyway, so in other words, slowly move into tangible assets. Now,
that's right.
Not only will it be worth money, but as the economy gets in trouble, it'll be really worth a lot more money, or a lot more trading power, or whatever is left of an economic system when the paper money ceases to be of great value.
That's right. Everyone knows the golden rule. That's right. Whoever has the gold makes the rules.
Right.
And in a system where there's financial chaos everywhere and people are losing their shirts to stocks and bonds and other paper-type investments, tangibles shine. And the person who has those tangibles will be able to swoop in and take advantage of bargains. I mean, I remember in 1980 entire houses trading hands for $2,000 in silver quarters or for a couple of $20 gold pieces.
Hmm.
These are the types of trades that you'll be able to take advantage of if you've properly positioned yourself. Now, if you're like everybody else in stocks and bonds, you'll be trying to get out with what's left of your skin. So take a portion of your wealth and move it over to what the Constitution says is money, and that's gold or silver coins. I publish some booklets, Art. You know, I'll give them away to any of your listeners who use your name. Educate yourself, find out what's going on out there, and then take action to protect yourself.
You've got a number people can call?
Oh, sure. If you mention that you heard it on Art Bell's show, I'll send you four free booklets. Now, they're entitled The Ravages of Inflation, Megaflation 2000, The Truth About Money, and Denominating Your Wealth. Now, you can get these four booklets by calling me at 1-800-468-2646. There are operators standing by. That's 800-468-2646. And just mention that you heard it on Art Bell's show.
All right. That's excellent. Well, see, now there goes your phone. I want to know about the new money, and this is an area of your expertise.
Sure. I wrote an article about it for the Numismatist last night.
What actually is going on? They printed the $100 bills, we're all hearing.
Right.
When will they begin to be distributed?
This month and next month.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that's according to the Federal Reserve and the Treasury. Now, they've made great pains. They actually hired Young and Rubicam, that Wall Street firm. But interestingly enough, Art, you know, the push to make people aware of it is not being done in this country, but it's rather being done overseas. You know, there's a tremendous amount of paper money circulating overseas.
Andrew, do you have a place you can escape to from all those phones? Because it's going to start going nuts in there.
Yeah, I certainly can. I shouldn't have done that.
Well, no, that's quite all right. That's what we're here for. And I don't mind you doing that. It's just that it's going to be distracting because it's going to be going on in the background all the time. And I'm not prepared to let you go. So we've got new $100 bills. Now, ostensibly, our government is telling us that they are printing these bills to foil the counterfeiters. And, in fact, in the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon, it's my understanding that Iran and others are quickly printing up counterfeit U.S. dollars with what I heard were actual plates they got hold of somehow. What do you know about that?
Well, actually, what happened was the East German Secret Service, Stasi, back in the 80s, got the engravers to do the plates. And our own Bureau of Engraving and Printing sold the Shah of Iran a printing press.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Representative Jim McCollum revealed that to the people of the United States. I found it shocking. Not only did they sell him the press, but they sent technicians over there to align it and calibrate it. And then, of course, he fell out of power. The Ayatollah Khomeini came in, and the press fell into the wrong hands. And then, of course, the East Germans got the plates down there. And so now, in the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon, is a printing press that prints currency that the feds refer to as super notes because they cannot tell them apart from the authentic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Federal Reserve Bank can't tell them apart, how on earth are you and I supposed to?
Well, we can't. And, you know, I hear rumors. I'm going to be traveling to Scandinavia and Russia in August. But I'm hearing rumors that in a lot of countries in Europe, they won't even take a $100 bill anymore. Is that true?
That is correct. It's a very curious situation. You have Republic National Bank shipping over billions of dollars in planes out of New York in $100 bills to Russia, where I understand there's over $220 billion in $100 bills circulating there alone. And then you have the other capitals of Europe being flooded with this counterfeit money from the Beqaa Valley. So you have so much in the way of $100 bills circulating in Europe that I think that, well, they understand what's going to happen a lot better than we do. I think they're going to one day, very soon, outlaw or demonetize the old $100 bill in favor of this new $100 bill. And in doing so, they'll be able to capture like $300 billion in money without ever firing a shot.
They are going to introduce these new $100 bills without immediately taking the old ones out, aren't they?
That's correct. That's what I don't understand.
Now, how can that not produce inflation?
Exactly. And think about this. If, in fact, the reason we're issuing new hundreds is because the old hundreds are being counterfeited so well that we can't tell them apart.
Right.
And if we are willing to not demonetize the old ones but merely to trade them for the new ones, then aren't we, in effect, legalizing that counterfeiting operation? If they're going to be the only ones producing
the $100. You know, you actually make me feel better because you don't seem to understand this either, and I've been struggling with it, and I feel like a dummy because I can't figure it out. Andrew, hold on. We're going to the news at the top of the hour. We'll be back. Economist Andrew Gauz with us.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Coast AM from February 9th, 1996.
I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM, and we're up against a lot of deadlines, so I've got a couple of quick announcements I've got to make. The 1996 cruise to Scandinavia and Russia that we're going to take is coming up on deadline. It seems impossible to me. Impossible. But we are actually going to stop it at 200, and we're at 150. So we can take 50 more people, and then we're going to stop it. After that, in other words, let me put it this way to you. We don't want an unmanageable crowd, and it's going to be a premier cruise on the Holland America Line's Pride, the MSS Mazdam, which has cabins that make other cruise ships' cabins look like closets. This is luxury, oh, like you've never seen. We're going to Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, St. Petersburg, and Russia. I'm going on up to Moscow. You can trail along there if you want. See West Berlin. We'll be in London. And all in the luxury of this incredible ship. And I don't have time to go through all of it with you, but I can tell you this. The deadline to book is February 15th. If you book before February 15th, you get a copy of my book free, The Art of Talk, which I will autograph for you on the ship. Now, back to Andrew Gauz, who is... Andrew, are you an economist?
No, I wouldn't claim that title.
Okay, you are what then? What
I'm I'm a person who has studied the monetary history of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Right back to the founding of the Republic, and even before when we were issuing continental currency and the Coinage Act was being decided upon and the location of the mint was being decided upon.
Okay, how do you delineate between your expertise and that of one who would say he is an economist?
Well, an economist, I guess I'd probably quote George Santayana. Those that fail to study the past are doomed to repeat it. Economists have a habit of overlooking recent history.
Yes, I suppose so. I would like to take, obviously, we have generated many questions. And I want to give you this. I've got a lot of faxes coming in for you, too. Dear Art, let me give you a piece of damn good advice. I believe that precious metals have their place in an investment portfolio, but before expendable income is invested in that manner, I believe it's definitely more important to have a 1 to 2 year food supply, other usable assets.
Yes.
Should this nation eventually suffer a drastic economic downturn, the people will at least have food to feed their families. Would you agree with that?
100%. That's the way I was raised. I thought that almost goes without saying. You know, you should keep a well-stocked pantry and figure that, you know, if you have kids and you know that they're not doing it, figure that you better do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, what happens in these tough economic times is that the offspring tend to come running right back home. And if you think you have enough for you and the wife put away, when you add a hungry son and a wife or daughter-in-law and a couple of kids, you know, it'll be gone quick.
Sure.
So, yes, I'm firmly in favor of that. I believe in that. I was raised like that, and that's good, sound advice.
So prepare yourself in every way.
That's right. You don't want to try to run to the store or try to develop a barter network after. You know, it's like buying fire insurance after the flames are licking at your heels. You want to take care of it in advance.
But, you know, we're almost in a day and age where you can do that. They're talking now about health insurance, for example.
Right.
That you can effectively buy after you have become sick.
That's right.
It amazes me.
That's a good point. They forced the insurers here in New Jersey. You're right. No pre-existing conditions. So if somebody has cancer, they have to insure them. I agree. But I witnessed a snowstorm here a few weeks ago that was of epic proportions.
Yes.
We had 6 feet of snow, and the people were knocking each other down in the supermarket trying to get the groceries off the shelves. And I thought to myself, this is just a little snowstorm.
Yeah.
What is going to happen in an economic emergency?
I know.
They don't even have their cupboard stocked. So
okay, here's another good one for you that points to the same thing, Andrew. A story from Honolulu the other day.
Right.
You saw the guy, you saw the standoff. He had a shotgun taped to the guy's back of some guy's head.
Right.
Shot one fellow. Then himself was finally shot by the police.
Mm-hmm.
The brother of the perpetrator of that incident said, you know, my brother didn't have a job, has a child, was down and out. What do you expect? And it blew me away. It's like, you should expect that when people get down and out, lose their job, or come on hard times, they're going to take a high-powered rifle and they're going to start killing a bunch of people. And unfortunately, in this day and age, I am starting to believe that is what we should expect. And if we ever, I mean, what if we had something the size of the Great Depression on us? It'd be a slaughter out there.
Yes, it would. It would be survival of the fittest. And that's all the more reason not to have to venture out of your house to get a loaf of bread or milk or a method or currency of exchange. You'd be better off to take these steps in advance, stockpile a little something away, a little tangible asset, a little food to feed your family, emergency water store. I have a tape that I put out, How to Survive the Coming Times and A Call to Arms, both of them. Go delve right into that subject, because that's something that we need to take responsibility for, this era of instant gratification, Art, where whatever your needs are, they can be filled instantly.
Right.
That's not the American way. You really got to remember the story of the ant and the grasshopper. Get out there and prepare yourself.
All right. I want to take a few calls, if we could, and let's hop, skip, and jump around and see what's out there. Fascinating topic. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Yeah, hi Art. I've got one question and one comment. Andrew, I think if the economy does collapse, that the IMF or the Federal Reserve will wipe out the whole debt and create a one world currency. And also, I heard that 401k funds hold on to them because eventually they have to go back up. I mean, they have to at least get something out of them. Could I have your comments on that? Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, I don't think that the Federal Reserve as a primary holder, see, the Federal Reserve banks hold as assets bonds of the United States. Those are their primary assets. They're not going to allow a default. That would be ludicrous. you know, that's just the vehicle. The 401k is the vehicle. The what's inside the 401k is what makes the difference. Now, you can put gold coins in your 401k, or you can buy stocks or bonds in your 401k. I would urge you, if you have a 401k and it contains bonds, sell them as fast as you can, and at least buy stocks or gold and silver coins.
All right. If you have a choice between gold and or silver, I remember the Hunt Brothers episode with silver.
Sure.
Silver has, it's gone up a few pennies or so, but it has not matched the recent rise of gold.
Well, that's right, in the short run. See, what happened to silver is the photographic industry, which used to use, was the biggest number one user of silver, has taken to this electronic imaging now. This has really cut into the industrial use of silver. So silver was beaten down to like $3.70 per ounce. And it's now risen back to $5.70 an ounce based on monetary needs. So I would suggest that silver, with its traditional 15-16-to-1 ratio for gold, is far, far and away a better investment in terms of potential. Now, I would say if the choice is whether to buy silver or gold, you're not going to make a bad choice. But I think when it's all said and done, percentage-wise, silver will have outperformed gold.
How soon do you see silver taking a big jump?
Oh, I see all the metals taking a jump right now. Is all commodities, corn, bread, I mean, just any commodity that you can name. This will be the year of commodities. Next year will be the year of commodities. You'll see commodities prices in general. And everything will be done to try to beat the prices down. You might see some sideways periods, but generally the trend is up. Inflation is coming back, and it's coming back with a vengeance.
All right, on our first-time caller line, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Andrew.
Yes.
How are you doing this morning?
Good, and you?
All right, now what's going on this morning?
Where are you, sir?
Sarasota, Florida.
Sarasota, all right.
Yeah.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, what's the deal with this Pappy Cannon guy?
Well, he has no, obviously, you're not listening to the radio, are you?
No, because I'm not supposed to.
Well, but you weren't even listening before you called, were you?
No.
No, all right, goodbye. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hello. Going once, going twice. I didn't get the right button pushed. Let's go to the wild card line. You're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Hi, this is Greg from KEX in Portland.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. I was wondering, at what time does your guest think that would be a good time to start investing in gold? What are some of the key signs to look for to really start taking this extremely serious?
Yeah, that's a good question. If we're looking for signposts, when will we know that things are going to take a downturn quickly, or that is just ahead?
A quick rise in interest rates, not driven by the Fed. In other words, the long bond taking a dramatic beating in terms of price and a dramatic rise in terms of yield. When you see the long bond all of a sudden shoot up in a dramatic fashion, having tested its bottom and bounced off, that's your indicator that interest rates have stopped going down and will start going up. And you can look for these signs, but you're on a steady upward course, my friend. Gold and silver, coins and metals and commodities, every single tangible that I can think of is just starting to march straight up. And the momentum is there. The psychology is there. I would just look for that slow, steady price increase. And when you see gold break 450, you don't need any more confirmation than that. It's off to the races after that.
Really? And again, though, here we are. Is it not strange to you, Andrew, that the stock market is in this seemingly unstoppable buying frenzy and gold is rising at the same time? I can't figure that out.
Well, it proves to me that it's not a healthy market. If, in fact, the stock market was rising at these rates and the bond market interest rates were falling for legitimate reasons, then gold would be beaten down to its all-time low.
Exactly.
If, in fact, we're looking at a 15-year low on the bond, then you're right. Gold should be nothing. They should be throwing it out of windows.
But they're not.
But they're not. Why? Because that fuel in the stock market and the fuel in the bond market is not the result of a healthy economy, but rather the result of excess government funding, where the Treasury Secretary is taking money that's not supposed to be circulating. It's supposed to be sitting aside in a pension fund, and he is circulating it to pay the debt. That's what's causing this recent rise. If you look at the increases in the supply of real money, it's been remarkable. And that's what really fuels inflation. Remember, that's all inflation is an increase in the supply of money.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Goss. Hi. Hello there. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Goss. Hi.
Hi, Art. How are you doing?
Fine. Just fine.
Nashville?
Tennessee, yes.
Good show tonight.
Thank you.
Just wanted to tell your guest that I certainly agree with everything you said about, you know, stockpiling your food and all that stuff. Very important. But as far as investing, do you place any importance, sir, on investing in the book Miss America by Howard Stern?
First-time callers, area 702-727-1222.
Howard strikes again.
Yeah, that's right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Andrew Goss. Hi.
Okay, hello.
Hello.
Two things, sir. Number one, your discussion about derivatives, I guess, is such a gross oversimplification of what they are as financial instruments.
All right, well, let's hear...
That's what you need sometimes, though.
Yeah, let's hear your definition.
Of what a derivative is?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, you're comparing... When you're talking about different options, you're talking about the Fed's use of derivatives. You're talking about really five or six different things. It's like comparing apples, oranges, and trees. The Fed does not use the derivative market as a means of controlling monetary policy for this country. That's
absurd. That's absurd. They most certainly do. They use the T-bond futures more than anyone else. That's a derivative, a T-bond.
Of course it is, but that's not the prime mode of Fed instrumentation. It's not using the futures market. Majority of the time the Fed is buying for foreign central banks more than for their own portfolio.
Are you referring to the Fed of New York now, or?
No, I'm talking about the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, which one?
The Fed.
There are 12.
Okay, let's talk about the Federal Reserve of New York.
That's who I was talking about.
All right, we're on the same channel, the Fed in New York.
The Fed of New York. The Fed of New York executes the open market committee's trades, and it does so in the derivatives market. They don't buy physical possessions.
You're telling me that they only use the derivatives market or the forward market to control monetary policy for this country?
No, that's not the only tool that they use, but it certainly is a tool that is used.
Of course. And you're also going to tell me that the use of the derivative market is for gambling, and linkening that to Las Vegas.
I'm the guy who said that.
Yeah, it has proper uses. Like, for example, if the farmer wants to plant corn, and at the end of the year he doesn't know what corn is going to be worth, so he wants the ability to sell his corn before he grows it, then that's the proper use of a derivative.
Well, there's no... You can't... Yeah, I know. I understand why a physical hedger uses the forward market.
Right.
And that's why the futures market was first... implemented as a risk management tool, especially for the physical owner or the long of the product.
All right, caller. My understanding of the runway aspect of the derivatives is kind of like a football game where you bet, for example, that Joe Montana, were he still there, would throw a 90-yard pass in the second half. You make that bet. And derivatives, when they're based on solid things, as Mr. Goss said, are one thing. But would you agree that they've moved off into the almost gambling area?
Well, the innovation of financial instruments is not... I mean, you could make arguments that they've been created and especially in the last 4 or 5 years... So major investment banks can rack up huge brokerage credits and whatnot. But
uh-huh.
No,
there
is a control mechanism, I would say. I wouldn't be that cynical to say that the only reason they even developed these instruments was to rack up profits.
Churning, I believe they call it churning.
Well, it's a control mechanism. There is nothing better than the derivatives market.
All right, and on that note, we're going to have to take a break. Stay right there, Andrew. We'll be right back to you. My guest is Andrew Goss. We're talking about money. Is that one close to your heart? And the economy. And we'll do more of it in a moment.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Says he's not an economist, but we're talking about the economy. He's got a big background, has been on more than 450 radio and television programs discussing the kind of thing we're talking about this morning. And by now, we certainly ought to have your attention. Card line, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Yeah, good morning, Art. Good morning, Andrew. Excellent show tonight, gentlemen.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm calling from Los Angeles.
All right.
My question is that I have been aware of predictions of economic collapse for a long period of time, including people who are advocating purchasing gold as a hedge against it. And I'm thinking back in particular to the early 80s and a fellow called Howard Ruff, who I used to pay some attention to.
Sure.
It seems to me they've just kept on rolling over the debt and making it bigger and bigger. What is to say that they cannot continue to do that? What is to say we will not continue to be amazed by the way in which the debt grows and continues to maintain itself, let's say?
All right, it's a good question. I asked you that earlier, and you said you thought the end of the line was months, not years away.
Right. Yeah, it's the annual interest payment that's going to tell the whole story. You know, when you get to where you're spending 60% or 70% of your total income in interest payments, that's the real telling point. So we've reached the point where taxes are about as high as they can go. I mean, all I ever hear people talking about are tax cuts. So I know it's an election year, but if somebody started talking about raising taxes, I think they'd be shot. You know, the American people would really feel that they're taxed to their limit.
Uh-huh.
You couple that with the fact that every tax dollar west of the Mississippi is necessary right now just to pay the interest on the debt, I don't see how they can continue to roll this over beyond that point. When your entitlement spending, which is your welfare, and they're already talking about cutting welfare, Social Security, Medicare, when your entitlement spending and your interest payments make up 88 cents of every dollar that you take in, you know, what is there left to cut? You reach that point where the combination of maturity dates on the debt, which, remember, we financed the entire Vietnam War on bonds. No one sacrificed for that war, and those 30 years are just about up. Like I said before, Ross Perot pointed it out that fully 80% of our total debt picture is coming due and payable like now, like between now and 1997. That's the real telling point. What's to prevent them from rolling it over? That huge interest payment. It's getting bigger every day.
So when you factor in all the smoke and mirrors and all the trust funds they can dip into and the manipulations and everything they can do, it's still going to come apart in that time span.
That's right. They've just about run out of tricks. As Rubin, Secretary Rubin, Honorable Secretary Rubin pointed out, he's used every financial trick that he has. He's taken all the money that he can take, and he only has one or two options left. So he, the Secretary of the Treasury, has admitted that under current circumstances, he cannot go past February 29th. Now, you know, what else do they need to tell you, folks? When the Secretary of the Treasury tells you he's already spent every dime in the Treasury, taken every bond that he can take, taken every dollar in every trust fund and replaced it with a bond, he's done everything he can do. Now, we're either going to raise the debt ceiling, create more money, or we're going to default on our debt. My bet is they're going to raise the debt ceiling, create the additional money. Inflation is the answer. I'm not one of those who sees a complete financial collapse, although there is that possibility. What I see instead is a steady hyperinflation over the next 7 years. So we'll all be talking about $2 candy bars and $3 gas and $100,000 cars like it was you know, nothing. Just like we talk about billions now, you know, billions.
The days of Germany.
Exactly.
Revisited.
Right.
Wheelbarrow money.
Yeah, before you see a collapse, you will see inflation. That's the thing I think most economists miss, Ravi Bhatra, Howard Ruff, and others, is that you must have an inflationary cycle before a collapse.
Mm-hmm.
All of those writers predicted inflation in the early 80s. They never expected that the government of the United States would allow us to go this far before inflating the currency.
Hmm. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Goss. Hi.
Hi. Thank you.
Where are you, by the way?
Oh, I'm sorry. Missoula, Montana.
All right.
Andrew, when you were mentioning about gold and the golden rule.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you familiar with the New World Mine outside of Yellowstone?
Oh, yes.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's that mine that we invited the UN, as I understand, UNESCO, to come in and declare that some type of a protected area.
Right. It was considered a World Heritage Site.
That's the one, yes.
And then all of a sudden, Clinton, I understand, got very interested in the mine.
Right.
And decided to have it declared a threatened site.
You know how much gold is there?
Well, I would say it's a lot if they're so interested in it.
Yeah.
I want to know how much gold is there.
It's a big pile. It's one of the biggest finds in North America. And so, as a matter of fact, studies show it would bring 100,000 jobs to your area. Am I right, ma'am?
She's gone now.
Oh, yeah. The studies show it would bring 100,000 jobs to that region. You'd have miners making twice as much as the average monthly wage for the whole state. You know, a real shot in the arm to the local economy. And they've passed all the hurdles. It's not even in the park. It's like 2 miles outside of the park. But just every pressure has been brought to bear. And when it was clear that there was no domestic pressure that could stop this mine from opening, then the Interior Secretary asked the United Nations, UNESCO, to declare this park a World Heritage Site, meaning we, the people, no longer have sovereignty over the Yosemite National Park.
Yes, my question is, why are they doing this, Andrew?
To prevent that mine from opening.
Why?
Why? Because I think they're trying to grab it. It will fall under the dominion of the United Nations. If any gold comes out of that mine after it becomes a World Heritage Site, it doesn't belong to anyone except the UN.
Well, are they trying to do that, or are they trying to simply prevent that much gold from coming to the marketplace?
I don't think it's that. I think it's a simple land grab and gold grab, because whoever gets the lease and the right to pull that gold out of the ground is going to be rich beyond their wildest dreams. Right now, it's almost like somebody stumbled across this gold, and everything is being done to just grab it. The only way to put it.
It's remarkable.
A great article on it in the New Republic this month, if anybody gets that, or the New American, excuse me.
Money, money, money. It really is fascinating. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Goss. Hi.
Good morning, Art. It is a great show this morning.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Minneapolis, and this is Jerry.
All right.
And I am sympathetic to your guest in many respects, but as two callers ago, I am skeptical about imminent economic and social collapse. If you looked at what happened in 1993, the gold stock and bond markets all soared simultaneously. And in 94, we had the worst bond market since post-World War II. Now, those movements in the markets can be traced directly to Fed maneuvers, I would say.
Yes.
Now, you look at countries like Italy and Belgium, and they're in far worse condition than we are, and yet they are maintaining themselves as countries. And I think that needs to be commented on, that we could probably have a few more tricks pulled out of the bag for a few more years here. Clearly, you're talking about that point when we can no longer meet the obligations on our interest payments, but I think that's a ways off, is it not?
Yeah. Unless they don't raise the debt ceiling, it's a couple weeks off. If they raise the debt ceiling, yes, we can do that. But one thing that everyone seems to miss is that one of the reasons that gives the dollar so much help is that it's a currency of choice for foreign nations. Foreign nationals would rather hold their wealth in $100 bills than in their local currency because of this difference in the inflationary rates. Some rates in foreign countries, 20, 30, even 100% annual inflation, makes more sense to hold dollars. And so that gives strength to the dollar. That gives demand to it. Additionally, you have entire economies pricing their goods in dollars. For example, oil. Anyone in the world who wants to buy oil has to convert their own currency into dollars, again, creating demand. What my fear is if the dollar gets weaker, as from its position where it is now, and nations of the world decide not to hold their reserves in dollars and send those dollars back to the United States, that that one action alone could counteract all of these measures that have been put into place by Secretary of the Treasury and the Chairman of the Fed. So we
but
are
Andrew,
teetering in a precarious
no
position.
There's no currency out there right now with enough liquidity to as an alternative. And this is the scenario I would like you to address. And that my theory is that we are seeing increasingly irrelevant nation states, and power is shifting to transnational corporations and the central banks. And as they gain more power and calling more and more shots in the world, perhaps there is sort of a electronic currency is waiting, you know, waiting in the lurks for us. And I'd like to have you comment on that.
Okay. Yeah, the electronic currency is probably the biggest danger to our sovereignty of everything. Because if, I mean, think about this. In 1933, the problem that our bankers had then was that the bankers had a supply of gold that was X, and they had a supply of notes that was 2X. So they had twice as many notes as they had gold. What did they do? They prevented you, the people, from trading your notes in for gold. Now we fast forward to 1995. I've already told you that the money supply, in terms of paper money, is less than $500 billion. But the total money supply is $5 trillion. So what does that mean? Same thing, that if just 10% of the people went to the banks tomorrow and demanded their money in cash, there wouldn't be enough. So the caller is essentially right. The solution to this problem is to eliminate cash, to prevent the American people from using cash at all. If they don't use cash, then all of the money stays closed within a system and can be monitored and controlled, because a controlled inflation is easy to swallow. You know, 5% a year, 6% a year, we can take that, and we don't complain. Even though we lose, you know, 50% of our purchasing power every few years, we don't complain.
Back to the boiling lobster.
Exactly. And so that's why that was such a good analogy. We are a boiling lobster. Those of you who realize it will take steps and protect yourself. Don't look for a collapse. Don't look for waking up tomorrow and the world coming to an end. But there are some financial maneuvers coming ahead that are not going to be good for the average American.
Art, I've got two questions for Andrew. One, do tangible assets include 14-carat, 18-carat gold, sterling, silver, gemstone, jewelry? Could it be converted?
Gemstones I don't like because they're not fungible. In other words, a 1-carat diamond is not worth the same as 10 1/10-carat diamonds.
Hmm.
But 14-carat gold, 18-carat gold, sterling, silver, most certainly. Very liquid. Very easy to buy and beyond the realm of reporting.
All right. In the case of default or economic crash, what would be the position of money markets and CD bank accounts?
Boy, talk about last place. That's where you'd be with those. You'd be in last place. First place would be, of course, bondholders, government bondholders, and the individual commercial banks who are holding bonds as an asset. If they're strong enough, then they may get a chance to pay their depositors, but the depositors are the last in line, folks. You'll be the last one to get money if you have a bank, a commercial bank CD, or a money market fund.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Hi there. I wanted to ask Andrew what the situation will be with money market funds.
All right. Well, we sort of just went through that.
Just went over that. Yeah, you're last in line with a money market fund. Everybody else gets paid before you do.
Even the stocks and bonds?
Well, certainly the bonds do. Stocks now, you know, that's an equity position. So company that you hold stock in could easily go bankrupt, or it could easily multiply its wealth even while the bond market is collapsing. So remember, money market funds are more tied to the bond market than they are to stocks.
Okay. What about the international Dow 30 stocks? The Dow 30 industrials are mostly international stocks. Would they be better than other NASDAQ?
Well, certain technology companies, I think, will clean up in the years to come. These are cutting-edge technologies. But those Dow 30s, those blue-chip industrial companies, they have solid asset bases. A majority of them have real estate that will carry the load. So now, I wouldn't be too worried, but at the same time, there's going to be a loss of principal, even in the strongest of stocks.
Okay, so a person would be better off than in foreign currencies or global funds? Or
yeah, I like foreign currencies that are stronger than the dollar. I would stay away from anything weaker than the dollar. I mean, you don't want to be in the Italian lira or the British pound or the French franc, but certainly the Swiss franc or the German mark will probably fare better in the coming years.
What about the Japanese yen?
I don't like the yen because the banks in Japan hold all of their reserves in U.S. dollars. So the banking crisis in Japan is going to make our S&L crisis look like a picnic. They have real problems over there. there, I wouldn't count on the yen. The yen is a puppet of the dollar.
And you might, so in other words, as goes America, goes Japan.
That's exactly right. You know, the Japanese central banks and the Japanese commercial banks hold a majority of their reserves in U.S. dollars and U.S. Treasury bonds. So as the dollar goes, so goes the yen.
I'll tell you, Andrew, I went to the Orient last year, Tokyo, Hong Kong, Bangkok, what is going on in Japan with regard to the currency exchange situation with the U.S., it was 78 or 9 at the time, or 80, I can't remember. It was awful.
It was, yeah.
And that's when I arrived, bought, I think, a beer and a couple of Cokes, and it was $20.
That's right. Yeah, and we're not much better than that now. It's like 107 yen to the dollar now.
Right.
In 1985, you're looking at 240 yen to the dollar. And, you know, they meet in the Plaza Hotel in New York City, the G7, and they decide amongst themselves that they're going to allow the yen to fall to 107. Wouldn't you have loved to have been a fly on that wall, Art? Can you imagine
indeed.
The inside information that left that room? And certainly fortunes were made and that's really my problem with this whole system. If we would give this power back to Congress, they were going to change the value of the dollar. They would have to do it on the floor of Congress. They couldn't do it behind closed doors. What the system that they have now, Art, enables them to point to the Federal Reserve Bank and say, it's all their fault, we don't have anything to do with it, and we need to make them act responsible because that's what we intend them to be.
All right, back to the phones. First-time caller line on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Hello. I was just curious to ask Andrew Gause about what exactly U.N. sanctions would be.
All right. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Michigan.
Michigan. All right. UN sanctions.
Well, in the event of us not paying our debts.
Yeah, default.
Yeah, we're a deadbeat nation. They can put a trade embargo on us to prevent us from exporting our products overseas. Or if any products do get through, they can seize whatever monies are due. So the actions that the UN can take regarding sanctions, especially now that this WTO thing has gone through and the NAFTA and GATT, you know, we are just another member state, and if we fall into a rough position, don't expect the same treatment that we gave. You know, okay, well, don't worry about it, Germany. We're going to forgive your $50 billion in debt, or don't worry about it, Israel. You know, you don't owe us any more money. We, as the United States, will not be treated with such kid gloves. We will be treated with the respect that a deadbeat deserves.
I guess I've always known that in my heart. We forgive debt left and right, $7 billion to Egypt, and the list is long indeed.
It is.
We do it for all kinds of reasons. We're very free with money. But I just know those other nations, if we ever got in trouble, they might come bail us out, but it wouldn't be with a smile and a forgiveness. It would be a hard ball game, wouldn't it?
You're absolutely right. There would be strings attached everywhere, and you really have to consider where the United States has gone in the last 40 years. You know, we've gone from being the biggest creditor nation and therefore the one less likely to be pushed around to the biggest debtor nation and now the one most likely to be pushed around. So I think that your assessment is correct. No one's going to give us an outstretched hand unless it's got a hammer in it.
You want to do one more hour?
Anytime.
Can you? No, not like anytime. Right, like right now.
That's fine.
Really?
Yeah, sure.
When we come back from the break, I would like to ask you, of the Republican candidates out there right now, we've got Mr. Flat Tax, we've got Mr. Let's Close It All Down and Have Fortress America Buchanan, we've got Mr. Let's Make a Deal Dole, we've got Lamar Alexander, who looks straight but hasn't caught fire. Of the candidates that are out there right now, Andrew, when we come back, I would like to talk about the one that you think would do us the most good. And so think about that, if you would, through the top of the hour. Actually, I would also like to ask you about the one most likely to be our next president, I'm sorry to say. You know that guy. That's right. All surveys show not any of the Republicans would beat Bill Clinton. So we'll be asking about 4 more years as well.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 9th, 1996.
Good morning, everybody. My guest is Andrew Gause. Not, he says, an economist, but a currency historian. He's been on 450 radio and television shows talking about the kind of stuff we're talking about this morning. Our economic situation, the possibility of a U.S. default, the economy in general, how one protects oneself. And we're about to ask him about the presidential candidates, so stand by to stand by for that. I wonder, who do you think he favors? Knowing his economic philosophy, which you've been listening to for a couple of hours, it'll be interesting to see who he favors, won't it? Back now to Andrew Gause. The lines are jammed. My fax machine is going nuts. Everybody has questions. Here's one of them. Dear Art, I have a theory for your guest. If the collapse of the American dollar should come, the true currency of the future would be weapons, drugs, information, and electronics. The days of paupers ransoming their gold to the nobility of the kingdom will be lost forever. And he, Steve, he says at the end, I don't remember any gold in Mad Max.
Yeah, we are a TV economy, that's for sure. I don't see anything even resembling Mad Max, folks. I, you know what I see, Art? You and me on a rocket chair porch 20 years from now talking about how we would work all day for $100 and our kids down on the ground laughing at us.
Yeah, probably.
Like they wouldn't even get up for $100.
Well, they may be laughing, and it may turn out that way, or they may be chasing after us old folks, and instead of the rocking chair, we'll be seeing how far our, and fast our feet can take us from a very angry generation ahead.
Good point. What was that president's budget last year showed that that generation would be paying 82% of their lifetime earnings in taxes.
Wow.
You're right. They probably will want to hunt us down.
All right, here's another one. Please ask your guest, who would be our best choice for president in the near future? Now, that's what I promised to ask you out of the hour, and so here it is. Both of us want to know. It's Diane listening to KGA in Spokane. I want to know, too, of the whole field of candidates out there right now, who do you favor?
Richard Lugar.
Richard Lugar?
Yes.
And your reasons?
Well, Richard Lugar is the only candidate that's talked about an honest system of taxation. You know, we're not going to get anywhere in this country until we stop taxing production and start taxing consumption. This notion that you continually tax an average wage worker, you know, if he works 40 hours, he gets one paycheck. If he works 45 hours, he might make less than he got for 40 hours.
Right.
It's a deplorable situation.
All right, let's touch briefly on the other candidates. Fortress America Buchanan.
Sure, the protectionist attitude.
I like Pat. He's honest. He's straightforward. Means what he says. Says what he means.
Mm.
Nice guy to listen to.
Certainly dangerous.
But he would literally build a wall around us economically and I guess in reality, you know, down on the border. But economically, he would close trade and we'd kind of stick our economic heads in the sand. What would that bring on?
Well, there's a certain amount to be said for that. I certainly would start protecting what little industry is left in this nation. I see the alarm in Pat's reasoning. You cannot manufacture wealth out of thin air. You need a productive society. And we have frankly encouraged our corporations and our people to not produce. I mean, how many farmers are we paying not to grow?
It's true.
You know, it's ridiculous. This notion of stopping or slowing production in this country, we are the most productive nation on earth, folks. And until you get off of this taxing production and not taxing consumption kick, we're going to continue down the path that we're on.
All right. I'll be talking about it after you're gone in the next hour. But what about Mr. Flat Tax Forbes? I can't let you get away without commenting on his flat tax idea. Is it a good idea?
No, it's not. It's a, you know, same woman, different gown. A flat tax is no different from a graduated tax. It's still a direct tax. I just, I don't know. I have a problem with the notion of allowing multinational corporations to import products into this country tax-free and then taxing the wages and the lifeblood of the American people.
That's so you would rather see it based on consumption?
Absolutely, because you know what? If I decide I'm going to go in my yard and grow a garden so I don't have to buy fruits and vegetables and pay a tax on that, then I'm going to do it. If I decide to recycle stuff or to, you know, it will just encourage a drop in consumption, which is what we need. We need more production, more savings, less consumption. We cannot be the world's consumer. We cannot have other nations producing their goods and then bring them here for us to consume. We need to produce.
All right. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Yes. I'm calling from Vancouver, Washington.
Yes, sir. Glad to have
KEX.
You. Yes, sir.
You spoke earlier about the commodity market and the options market. What would be the worth in looking at it that way? And let's say the gold is $400 an ounce, and you'd say you have an approximate net worth of $400,000, that you went into the commodity market, the options market, say a year or a year and a half out, and took a contract for 1,000 ounces of gold or the equivalent in silver.
Well, it's a great strategy. the problem... Again, my problem with the derivatives market is simply that it's an amplification of the problem. So when the boom comes or when the bust comes, it's amplified by the derivatives market. Now, for the average guy to buy contracts into the future, it's a risky proposition. You might just as well lose all of your money as make any money. So I prefer the physical possession market. If you're going to buy gold, you buy it physical, you hold it in your hand, you store it yourself. You don't get any margin calls. The worst that can happen is if the gold price doesn't rise, at least you're holding an asset. If you buy an option to buy gold in the future and the price doesn't move, every bit of money that you put up in terms of premium is gone. So while it could amplify your returns, it could certainly amplify your losses, and that's the main reason I don't like derivatives for the average investor.
How's that, caller?
Well, then the reverse of that, then let's say instead of that, that you take a certain amount of money, say that you're willing to risk... whether it's $10,000 or $20,000, whatever, and you go to your broker and put it in the coin, what they call it, where it's held by the banks in New York.
Right.
What I don't know.
American Eagles, they're called. Yes.
Yeah, and you can do that with I understand with gold coin, 1 ounce coins, or with the silver coin, or for bullion, I guess too.
Yeah, you can do it with silver eagles, 1 ounce eagles, and gold eagles. Those are the two acceptable vehicles in the IRA.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it makes perfect sense because many people don't have money to invest outside of their IRA. It's a sorry state of affairs, but there it is. You know, the majority of a lot of people's investment dollars are strictly in the IRA, and if you cannot buy any other form of gold with your IRA, and the only gold you can buy is in the form of American Eagles, then go for it. If it's a choice between not buying anything and buying it in your IRA, I would say buy it in your IRA.
All right. Thank you very much, caller. Dear Art, your guest says inflation precedes collapse. What happened in 1929? The market was hitting daily new highs, inflation low, confidence at the time was high. I predict the haves will become the have-nots within 12 months. The parasailing beautiful people will meet reality head-on. That's a crack at me. I went parasailing, so I guess I'm a beautiful prisoner. How do you react to that? In other words...
That's a pretty accurate assessment. The Roaring Twenties were named that because of all of the hot money that was created to finance World War One, and as it filtered back into the economy throughout the 20s, the similar situation to what we're looking at now, although the reason was different, it was a war... The reason is different from the current reason, but the effect is the same. You had a lot of money going into the stock market, pushing prices ever higher, pushing real estate prices ever higher, and ultimately that inflation was followed by a collapse, which we're all familiar with, the Great Depression. So I think the caller is essentially right, and his timetable pretty much agrees with mine.
Mm-hmm.
Within the next 12 months, there will be some drastic shifts in the monetary values of the United States, and he's right. The people that have money are the ones that will suffer the most. The average wage earner and the debtor, he's probably going to make out the best because he's going to be repaying his loan with dollars that are worth less than the ones he borrowed.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Where are you coming from, please?
Salt Lake City.
All right, good.
Yes, your guest forgot to mention one thing about One World Money, and that is there won't be a debit card or a credit card, but rather probably a chip, which would be inserted on the right hand or under the skin of the right hand or forehead. And this will probably be the mark of the beast, which is prophesied right in the Bible, to come just before the Antichrist rules the world.
All right, thank you. Well, there's the biblical economic take on things, and do you have any comment on that, Mark?
Technology's certainly there. I can't argue with that, but I just say to people who are waiting, if you're waiting for somebody to come and say, put this chip under your hand before you take action, I think you're waiting a little too long. I suggest that by the time that occurs, if that even occurs, we will have already moved into a cashless society, and most transactions will be conducted electronically. This will be just sold as a method of convenience.
Well, my mom always told me that God helps those who help themselves.
Indeed.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi. Hello there. Whoops, oh, I didn't push the button. Now, Wildcard Line, you're on the air. I'm sorry, with Andrew Gause. Go ahead.
Radio Free America.
How you doing?
Yeah, great show, Art. What are my risks on Krugs? I bought a lot of them, and I'm wondering, you know, if the government came down, they'd want them.
Yeah, that's your primary risk on Krugerrands, Maple Leafs. Your primary risk there's two. One is IRS 6045B, which says basically, if you sell me Krugerrands, I have to have your Social Security number, and I have to report it to the Treasury. The other one would be the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917, as amended in 1934, which simply says that any time the president can outlaw the private ownership of gold bullion. In that case, Krugerrands, Maple Leafs, all of that falls under the auspices of gold bullion. So, I mean, I would urge you to trade your Krugerrands for old circulated $20 gold pieces or even low-grade uncirculated $20 gold pieces. The premium difference between the two, in other words, a Krugerrand's worth about 4.25 right now, and a $20 gold piece in its worst circulated condition is worth about 4.75. For that little bit of difference, you might as well go with the insurance. Because
right. Can I ask another question, Art?
Shoot.
Yeah.
Don't you think that there's signs of foreclosure already with the GATT and the NAFTA, the Mexican bailout, and our government's great interest in our guns?
Well, that would be the setup for the foreclosure.
Right. And I see the Bureau of Land Management running through the United States perfecting its land patents, and that's another important thing. All of the titles to federal lands, the Bureau of Land Management has been under this mysterious effort to perfect all of their titles, and I wonder about that too. So yeah, there are signs of a foreclosure out there, but at the same time, an inflationary cycle will do the same thing. So I think we have one more inflationary cycle.
I would like to run this by you. I have a little pet theory that I talk about all the time on the show as it relates to social, political, economic matters. I call it the quickening. It seems to me as though we have entered, and that's not a religious, necessarily a, maybe it is, I don't know. It's just a pet phrase of mine. I've noticed doing this show now for, 11, 12 years, that events are accelerating at an ever-increasing pace. Now, your area is money, monetary matters, and so forth. Would you say that economically we are, at the moment, quickening?
Very astute. Yeah, our yes, the quickening.
Yeah.
Mind if I use that?
No, I don't mind a bit. Everybody.
No, that's probably a very apt description of what's happening, and it's happening so quickly that most people just aren't paying any attention.
All right, let's go back to the phones. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm Steve, calling from Ashridgeville, Kansas, and we get you on KCMO from Kansas City.
Kansas City, of course. Yes, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Now, I was wondering something about this gold thing. Now, I have a nonprofit organization that I'm trying to get off the ground, and I was wondering if it was okay or legal for nonprofit organizations to invest in gold and silver.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Is it?
A nonprofit organization. I assume you mean chartered under the IRS code.
Exactly.
I don't believe you can buy gold with that, but I couldn't pretend to give you tax advice. I would urge you to consult an accountant. That 503C, I think, is what that falls under, and I don't believe you can buy gold, but I could be wrong on that count.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry.
Thank you very much for the call. What about I mean, if somebody's sitting with a wad of cash, you want some diversity. Obviously, you're not going to go out and buy all gold. Municipal bonds.
No.
No, huh?
No. No, absolutely not. I mean, that's my opinion, Art. I could be wrong, but I just think that municipal bonds will suffer the same. You know, unlike stocks, bonds are all tied together with one rope. And the minute that the Treasury bond yield falls, that's it. It's over. All of the other municipal bonds, corporate bonds, everything goes right along with it. Unlike the stock market, where one stock can completely collapse and the others can still continue, if there is any break in the long bond, it will drag municipal bonds, corporate bonds, just all brands of commercial paper right down the tubes with it. So I'm just not a municipal bond fan. I think anyone who buys a municipal bond at this level has to really have their head examined. You know, you're looking at 6% long rates. 30-year money is 6%. What's inflation? 3 or 4%?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's your real gain there? You're almost losing money to inflation. So I would really think carefully before I tied up my money for 30 years at 6%.
Well, what would you, let's say you had $40,000 or $50,000 cash.
If it's in cash, you have a real problem. You really do, because what I suspect is that this currency changeover is really an attempt to flush out this underground economy. Many Americans have taken matters into their own hands. You know, the painter comes over the house, I'll paint your house for $2,000, but if you pay me in cash, I'll do it for $1,500. And these people have decided to store all this cash. This money changeover, I think, will catch a great deal of that.
Yes, indeed.
So I would urge you, if you have that much cash, to, you know, get out of it. That's like keeping your milk on the porch. It's spoiling while you're holding it.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be much better off to buy food, to buy gold and silver coins, to buy art, antiques, an old automobile, an old Harley-Davidson motorcycle. I could think of 100 things better than just keeping it in cash.
All right, Andrew, time for one more, I think, before the bottom of the hour. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Wouldn't the fair tax movement help save us from a lot of this trouble?
Fair tax in what regard, sir?
The 800 fair tax movement, wouldn't they help save us?
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that one.
What is the theory? Sir, pause. What is the theory behind this fair tax movement? What is it?
Well, a lot of it's basically a consumption tax.
Okay. Well, that's what I advocate, a consumption tax. Nothing taxing your production. In other words, whatever you earn each week, you take home. But every time you spend money, there's a tax right off the top that goes into the federal coffers to finance the operations of government.
So in other words, you've got a fair redistribution of wealth.
That's right. If you consume a lot, if you make a lot of money and you live high on the hog and you consume a lot,
then you pay.
You pay a lot of taxes. But if you don't make a lot and you don't spend a lot, then you don't pay a lot of taxes.
All right. Hold it right there, Andrew. My guest is Andrew Gause. We're talking money and economics. Close to your heart. I know it's close to mine. More in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 9th, 1996. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 9th, 1996.
This is my economic doomsday music. Not to say absolutely that it's going to be economic doomsday. I shouldn't say that. But it has a bit of that flavor, doesn't it? Remember, folks, it's only money. And we'll be right back with Andrew Gause. Back now to Andrew Gause. Andrew, here is a question for you, which is a good one. It comes from Joanne in Hillsboro, Oregon. We have no investments, but what we are doing is doubling our mortgage payments to pay off our house. Our ARM, adjustable rate mortgage, I guess, has a cap under 10%. Should we stop paying extra on our principal and buy gold instead?
Absolutely. I can't emphasize that enough. I mean, an ARM is a dangerous thing when it has a much higher cap than that. But if you're capped at under 10%, you're within 3% of current rates. So if the most that your mortgage can go up is 3 percentage points, you'd be much better off to put the balance of that into gold or silver. And certainly I would look at how much equity I have built up in that house. You know, this notion of having your house paid for free and clear, I think it's a dinosaur idea. Your house will not go up any faster or slower if you have a big mortgage on it or a small mortgage. It doesn't make much sense to leave all your equity locked up in an asset that could disappear. What are you going to do if interest rates go to 14%? Are you going to then try to borrow the money out of your house? You're much better off to take care of it now while interest rates are low. If you have a lot of equity built up, take some of it and put it into a tangible asset. And instead of doubling those mortgage payments, pick up some survival silver, gold, or silver coins that will protect you a lot better off than an extra mortgage payment.
All right. Art, your guest is great. A great show again. Did the U.S., if the U.S., in fact, defaulted on the debt, and if the international authorities tried to enforce sanctions against us, I have to wonder what role our military power would play, or would there be any such confrontation? In other words, would we rebel at international action taken against us, do you suppose?
Well, I don't think that we could count on the support of the military. The military, unfortunately, falls under international law, and as recently evidenced by the Michael New case.
So they're liable to be the enforcers,
exactly,
not the protectors.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would be more worried about them. I'll tell you, the one thing that does give me hope, though, is I see, and I'm not a member and I don't support or promote, the militias. They are your last line of defense. I think if the people decided that the military was going to act against us and the president called out the militia, I think he could count on the people of the states to defend this country.
Well, I don't know. There's two ways of looking at it. Oklahoma City, I've been talking about this militia thing with my audience a lot, Andrew, and what bothers me is it's another flashpoint. There's hot dogs in the FBI. The BATF particularly has a large group of them. And in the militia or militias, and there are many fine, outstanding, responsible militias out there, but there's also hot dogs.
Yes, indeed.
And the hot dogs on the right and the hot dogs on the left are running at each other like a big old freight train, and somebody's going to ignite this pretty soon, and I'm scared to death of what it might produce.
Good point. And you know, it's funny that the extremist militia guys are the ones that get all the press. I know several militia leaders who are ex-military men, sober, sound-thinking individuals that you would have no trouble dealing with on a one-to-one basis. And if you found out that they were militia members, you'd be shocked. But the people that seem to get all the press and all the publicity are those extremist fringe groups that can somehow discredit the entire movement by their thoughtless action.
All right. Look, you've been a really good sport, and you've answered just about everything very directly. So I'm going to give you another chance to plug. You send out information to people, right?
That's right. I send out four booklets that they're not glossy. They're just four, nothing but words, you know, no pictures. I lay it out the way I see it. And if after reading these four booklets you agree that what I say is correct, then you need to take the action that I recommend. There are many fine gold and silver brokers in this nation. One advertises right here on our show. Call a few and shop around. And, you know, I hope that you'll eventually do business with me or my firm. But if you don't, as long as you're doing it, it doesn't matter where you got the information. So if you get the four booklets, you educate yourself, mention you heard it on Art Bell's show, and call me at 1-800-468-2646.
Information is free, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, they'll just mention they heard it on Art Bell's show. I'll send those four booklets free. Cost me like a buck to do it.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, I get a certain return of people who say, well, maybe this guy's got a point. Maybe we shouldn't leave all our assets in paper.
All right, good, Andrew. Back to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Hi, this is Tim in San Diego.
Yes, sir.
I want to ask a little bit more about, you know, what would happen if the United States defaulted on their debt.
Sure.
I have a friend that we argue about this all the time, and he says that if worse came to worse, you know, the United States government would just tell all their creditors to go take a hike. And what I'd like to know is what would actually happen, you know, if you allowed that as a possibility, what would be the next things that would happen?
Okay, well, the first thing that would happen is the Social Security Trust Fund would be broke, because the number one item in Social Security Trust Funds are Treasury bonds. So if the government defaults on its debt, then Social Security collapses immediately, not 5 years or 7 years from now, but tomorrow, the next day. And then all the trust funds besides those, so all the civil service employee pensions are gone. All of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation insurance is gone. Every trust fund, remember, 170 different ones with $3 trillion in bonds, all of it United States debt. So $3 trillion would be wiped out of the money supply. And if the government defaulted on its debt, and this is a real technical point, if it defaulted on its debt, then technically that money is wiped out. And if you wipe $3 trillion out of the national money supply, a depression will ensue that will just rock the foundations of this nation.
Wow, thanks a lot.
Thank you for the call, sir. And
it's not a pretty sight. You know, a default would be unprecedented. It would just be the worst thing that has ever happened in financial history.
All right. Since we're back to that, let me ask you this. It's not going to be a clean ceiling hike, anything but. I suspect the Republicans are going to, at least it certainly looks like they're going to attach all kinds of conditions.
Well, sure, but even
this,
if you look at the Republican plan, or even the Republican plan calls for creating another $800 billion
correct,
in debt.
Correct. Correct.
That's the Republican plan.
Yes, I do understand. Nevertheless, let's stay with the politics for a second.
Okay.
Let's say it is totally not palatable to the president.
And he vetoes it.
And he vetoes it. Mm. That's certainly a political possibility.
Yes, it is.
And that would they let that happen? Could they be so irresponsible as to let that occur?
Well, yes. I mean, because
yes.
Because the Treasury Secretary still has a couple of extraordinary options.
Uh-huh.
He could technically take money and wait to be thrown in jail. I mean, technically, he could take that step.
If you were the Treasury Secretary,
mm-hmm.
and that political situation developed, what would you do?
I'd do it. I would take the money.
You'd take the money.
I'd take the money and pay the debt. That's right, because first of all, I believe that they would defend their Treasury Secretary with all the lawyers that they have. And secondly, I think that the implications of a default would be far worse than any personal repercussions to my freedom or my financial affairs with the action I've taken. I would divest a trust fund against legal authority and take the money and pay the Social Security recipients.
All right.
I'm not the Secretary of the Treasury.
Well, I know. You aren't anymore. You were for a moment there.
I was for a moment.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Gause. Hi.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening. Where are you?
I'm in Rochester, New York.
All right.
Once again, a great show.
Thank you.
You get the best one on the airwaves that I've heard. A lot of different guests. But I know you've got this particular guest tonight. And I just wanted to ask your very intelligent guest.
A question about Howard?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead, sir.
I don't know.
We'll see. Go ahead, ask your question.
Well, I mean, since you're open, do you like Howard?
If Howard would just pick up a real issue like Art Bell does, if he would pick up one real issue instead of wasting the time of his listeners, you're an obviously intelligent listener.
I'm getting better. I can pick him out.
I'm telling you. If Howard Stern would just pick up one real issue, I think he'd get my respect in a hurry.
Actually, he's a great entertainer, and at times he's very funny, but
no comparing him to you, Art.
Well, I guess in some ways, thank you. I appreciate that badge of honor. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Andrew Gause.
Andrew Gause.
Yes, where are you?
I'm in Alaska.
Alaska, yeah, all right.
I'm Gary. How you doing, Austin?
Fine.
Now, this is the guy that invented the Gause pad? No, I'm just kidding.
Frederick W. Goss, close enough.
Hey, okay, Mr. Goss, listen, hey, Art, you know, I haven't been listening tonight, so I don't know what this guy's about. Can you run it down for me real quick?
No, we can't, sir. It's all about money. You called in the blind. We just can't take the time to update you. We've got about 11 minutes to go or less. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Goss. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Barb in Bellevue.
Hello, Barb.
I want to confirm what I heard Andrew saying about the metals. When I looked at the futures prices, can you believe that in 2000 and in December 1999, the gold and silver are costing more than today? Now, if that is an indication of a real problem coming, what else would be?
Exactly. Exactly. And those people, remember, those people who are charged with marking those assets to the market, in other words, the guys who get to decide what they're going to sell an option for in November or December of 1999, they're operating with a full deck. You know, they know as much as anybody can. And that's a real good indicator, ma'am. That's a good thing to point out.
And also, I see another thing. How come a year out from now that let's say in the corn, soybeans, that sort of thing, real commodities?
Right.
The cash price today is what those prices are now. So that means for the future, those are the low prices.
Exactly.
Does it not?
Yes, it does.
Well, what do we do in this country? I mean, I agree with you on Swiss francs or German marks, something like that.
Yeah, tangibles, just anything but debt. Don't denominate your wealth in debt. And that's the best advice that I can give you. I guess that would be my closing advice. You look at whatever you call an asset, and if it represents debt, get rid of it and get on the equity side of the journal, preferably a physical possession equity, you know, something that you hold in your hand.
I think food's the first order, though.
It certainly is, and everyone should have a nice, well-stocked pantry and the capability of producing some type of food. I think everyone should have a little garden in their yard if they're capable. You know, get
you know,
out there.
We were thinking about digging up grass and planting corn.
Exactly, because that's how you really produce wealth. You know, when you grow stuff out of the ground, you are producing real wealth. When you exchange paper dollars for produce, you are not producing anything. So that's what we really need to get to in this country is a production-based economy and a tax on consumption and free production. If we will just take those steps and remonetize our Federal Reserve System with United States notes, we could have this republic back on a steady course within 5 years.
Have you heard this rumor that one more half that Reuben has available to him is selling our gold reserves?
Well, yes, technically, except that the gold reserves of the nation are pledged against the Federal Reserve issue. So that's when he can't sell the gold reserve, and I assure you that'll be the last thing he does, because it's pledged against our Federal Reserve note issue. So that technically doesn't even belong to the United States. It belongs to the privately owned Federal Reserve Bank.
Andrew, I've got a question for you. I would love to have this settled. I saw, I forget, with the new Bruce Willis movie.
All of the gold is in New York, yes.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where they went. They hit the bank in New York.
Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
That's right. Where is all of our gold? Is that where it is?
That's where it is. And it's not our gold. See, that's the point.
Or the gold.
The gold. The largest gold supply on the planet is buried beneath the sub-treasury building, the former sub-treasury building, which is now the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And that's a privately owned bank. And in their vaults lies the biggest store of gold on the planet. So, you know, the golden rule pops its head up again. There is gold in Fort Knox, but it's pledged against the monetary reserve, so it doesn't belong to the United States. The only thing we have is a strategic gold reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, compared to our Federal Reserve note issue, it's minuscule.
So even though that was a wild movie, the notion was roughly correct.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you well, who is that they asked why he robbed banks? He said that's where the money is. If you want to rob something today, you want to know where the money is, it's in the Federal Reserve banking system. It is not in the Treasury of the United States anymore. It's not in the commercial banks. The Federal Reserve banks control the wealth of the world. And until we really get a handle on that and understand how that functions, there's no hope for getting the monetary house in order.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Andrew Goss. Hi.
Good morning, Art. Calling from Austin, Texas.
Yes, sir.
Which one would be a better investment, Howard Stern or Baba Booey?
Baba Booey.
There you go.
He's much more intelligent.
Straight-on answer. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Andrew Goss. Hi.
Good morning. How you doing?
Okay.
I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Yes, sir.
And a quick question about the credit unions. How are credit unions as opposed to banks and stuff like that? I don't have a whole heck of a lot of money, but
credit unions, generally speaking, don't create money. That's
right.
The primary difference. What credit unions do is they take a deposit from you and they loan it to someone else.
Okay.
I like credit unions only because it's honest banking. Commercial banks create money out of thin air, so they have an advantage over credit unions.
Okay.
I would suggest if you have money in a credit union, understand that it's tied to your neighbor's 30-year mortgage.
Hmm.
If you don't mind having money in there for 30 years, it's a great place to put it. But if you're looking for a short-term out, you might get caught in a squeeze. If a bunch of depositors start requesting their money back from a credit union and the credit union has it all loaned out in 30-year bonds or 30-year mortgage.
Right. So what are you saying? That for a small, very small person, I own my own home. Does that matter?
That's very good. I mean, I'll tell you, you're far and above a lot of people these days. It used to be the American dream, and now it's almost unattainable.
All right. And while we're on that note, what do you project will occur with regard to the mortgage interest rate deduction? There are various plans out there, many of them now seemingly getting ready to challenge that.
No way it's going down.
No way, huh?
It's the sacred cow.
Oh, yeah.
The lobbyists are much too strong. I saw a good cartoon the other day. Well, I don't mind a flat tax as long as I can keep my mortgage deduction and my travel deduction. And, you know. The fact of the matter is that a flat tax will never fly. We have to change the fundamental way we collect taxes in this country. The only way to do that is to go to a consumption-based tax. This flat tax proposal is a smokescreen, folks. Look to the real issue. The only candidate promoting it, Richard Lugar out of Indiana. It's a consumption-based tax. How would you like to keep all the money that you earn every week? And the only method that decides how much taxes you pay is how much money you spend. Would you be encouraged to save money under that circumstance?
Right.
I think you would.
Andrew, he's not going to be our next president.
No, he's not.
Probably our next president is going to be our current president.
Bill Clinton, yes, unquestionably. The Federal Reserve will orchestrate a booming economy throughout the summer. He will go into the election a sitting president with a roaring economy, low unemployment, moderate inflation, low interest rates. He'll be reelected.
And so then, what do you project based on that assumption?
A rerun of 77 to 80. A slow, steady inflationary cycle. By the end of his second term, we'll have double-digit interest rates, double-digit inflation, skyrocketing commodity prices, a Republican president, and a Democratic House.
You've been a wonderful, wonderful guest. Time is, it's about 5 o'clock back there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Time to get up.
Time to get up. Well, thank you very, very much for being here this morning. Your phones are going to ring off the hook. The information you're sending out is free. Give them the number one last time.
I would just urge patience. We'll get back to you. I promise. It takes us a little while, but you'll get those booklets. The number to call is 1-800-468-2646, and just tell them Art Bell sent you.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Always a pleasure. Keep up the good work.
Take care. That's Andrew Gause, and I'll tell you something so that you know. We have no connection with him. He has no connection with any of our sponsors. I brought him on just to level with you, just to talk about the economy, but I want you to know that. I think it's important the audience understand that I brought him on without agenda, without any connection to any of our commercial sponsors. I wanted somebody who could address freely the issues that we just addressed.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
I'm Art Bell. Good morning, everybody. It is it's good to be here. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice music? Anyway, I guess that there's been a problem in Los Angeles with power. And I know this because my fax machine lit up like a Christmas tree. People telling me that KABC had gone off the air. One faxer saying that his three radios had lost it and that it was following some sort of power dip or surge or something. And indeed, there has been some sort of power problem. So if you're in L.A., you might let us know what happened to you. I believe KABC is back upon the air now. These things do occur. Glad you got to hear the guest. Would assume that you didn't miss more than about 30 minutes of the program. But one thing's surely obvious. We've got a lot of listeners in L.A. Holy mackerel. My machine just went absolutely nuts. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Tim in Minneapolis.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, I have two questions for you. They're not rhetorical. They're legit questions. One is concerning the gold. These companies that sell gold, how do they make money on it if it's a good investment?
Well, they make money when they sell you the spread. And he admitted that. He was frankly honest. And I say the same thing. If you buy a coin that is a very low-grade coin in terms of collectability, it's very close to the actual price of gold.
Okay.
Very little amount of difference. There is a small margin there when you buy perhaps even a circulated coin, but yet a collectible coin. You've got 1 ounce of solid, real 24-karat, honest-to-God gold.
Sure.
Now, when you go into the uncirculated realms, then you begin to acquire numismatic collectible value. Then you're into, a riskier venture. You're paying more money for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hoping, with good reason, by the way, that it will increase in value. So there's two ways to buy gold. One is to speculate that the coins are going to be worth a lot more.
Sure.
The other is to buy just down, down and dirty, near the actual ounce price of gold. And you pay a little bit for the protection of the numismatic value, which means they cannot come and take it away from you, as they did once before. So there you are.
Okay, I guess.
So they make their money on the spread.
I'll have to talk to somebody else.
Okay, the difference between the actual price of gold for an ounce of gold and a collectible coin.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Do you?
I think so. But
okay,
then,
if you
want to resell it, then, boy, it would be hard for me to sell it. Then I'd have to sell it back to the company, or how would I sell it?
Oh, there are very well established prices and grading systems, and you can go sell it to just about any coin dealer.
Okay, and my second question this is way off the topic, but. Somebody was talking about the savings and loan scandal. I don't know anything about it, and I was wondering if you kind of... I'll hang up and just...
Okay, well, that's way old news now. Thank you. What happened basically is that the savings and loan institutions were deregulated so that they could begin to themselves invest money in risky ventures. They did, and a lot of them lost their shirts. And actually what they lost was the taxpayers' shirts, because we the ones had to pony up the money to guarantee, they had guarantees. I mean, they were like banks. You shouldn't have been allowed to gamble that way, but they did. And then when it broke down, we, the American public, had to come up with a way to give the American people's money back. The only flaw in the whole system in the first place was the guarantee. There shouldn't have been any 100% guarantee. When you and I go gamble our money in the stock market or whatever we're going to do with it, we take a chance, right? You can make a lot of money. You can lose a lot of money. That's the way it works, both ways. The SNL scandal occurred because there were guarantees in place. And then we allowed them to go out and gamble this money, and many did. And they lost. And then the American taxpayer lost. So, in a nutshell, that's the scandal. The scandal is that that it was all guaranteed. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Steve in Sacramento.
Hi, Steve.
I wanted to ask you about ordering tapes and stuff. Did that go back quite a while? You created an insomniac here about a year and a half ago when I heard Al Bielek.
Yeah, we've got that tape.
You
can order the Al Bielek.
Yeah, how do you spell his name, by the way? Do you know?
No, I don't want to try it because I'll get it wrong.
That's fine.
As long as you can pronounce it, they can...
Okay, that's fine.
Another thing,
I agree with you about Shannon Doherty. Yeah, and then I saw a movie tonight, and somebody else, Isabella Rossellini. You could really see Ingrid Bergman in her face. It was amazing. Anyway, it's real good to talk to you. I really appreciate your show. And like I say, you kind of created an incurable insomniac here.
I appreciate the support. Thank you very much. What we do here is nothing regular. As you heard tonight, we had a very serious program about the economy, about money. And then I'm just as likely to go the other way and do something totally silly. It's night to night, this program is not the same. It's kind of funny because they'll come to me and ask me to make a promo for the show. How do you promo what we do here? It is not consistent enough to promo, and I don't want it to be. And so inevitably I end up in promo saying, look, tune in. It's live, interactive, unscreened, provocative. Funny, sad, scary. It's different every night what we do, and I wouldn't have it. It's the only way I could keep going. If I had to come on here every day and do the same damn thing, I couldn't do it. I don't know how Rush does it. I mean, nothing but politics all day. How can he do it? Here are some excerpts from an AP story I saw the other day, Art. Bob Kerry... I know Bob Kerry, a Democratic senator from Nebraska, was quoted in the January issue of Esquire magazine as saying, Clinton's an unusually good liar. Unusually good. Do you realize that? Kerry said Tuesday he apologized to Clinton in December after learning the quote was made public. It was an unfortunate remark that once it's in print, it looks a lot worse than it actually is, Kerry said. But does he think the president is a liar? I don't really want to comment further, Kerry replied. This is from a Russell in L.A. Well, Russell, at least he didn't use the C word. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Steve in Des Moines, Iowa.
Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I was hearing what you were saying about Forbes and how he's gone down in the polls. I've heard that on the news tonight, too.
Well, what I said about Forbes is that he looks like Bob Dole when Bob Dole was angry. It's kind of like, quit lying about my record.
I have not seen this yet.
Oh,
you're in the middle of it all.
I know. What do you think is going to happen? You're in Iowa. That's
Des Moines, the capital of Iowa.
That's right. So what do you think is going to happen?
I think Dole will probably come out number one, unfortunately. Buchanan, a good number two. Number three is anybody's guess, really, right now. And
do you think, and I was asking the audience about this earlier, do you think that the Dole and Buchanan people will talk?
I don't think so at all. No.
Hmm.
No, you might... I was thinking about this all day. Would he talk to even Maury Taylor or Alan Keyes? Alan Keyes might have better luck getting some kind of job with Buchanan. But not Dole. And I think it was wrong for Dole to run for this in the first place.
He should
have just stayed in the Senate.
Who do you think Dole would look to for a VP? That's what I meant when I said talk.
Well, if he isn't courting Colin Powell now... I don't know. I really don't, and I don't care. I mean, my governor here in this state is supporting.
If I was Colin Powell,
yeah,
I wouldn't be courted by anybody just yet. I'd say I'm sitting back here for about a month or two. We'll let a few of the Iowas and New Hampshires go by, and then we'll decide who to talk to.
Well, you're sort of onto something there. You got to remember, though, around here, if you get, you know, the number one ranking, it's really the kiss of death. So it is. I mean, who was that last guy who won Iowa, and the guy before him? And so, and the only reason that Dole is so big in the polls, and I think the latest poll is slightly artificially inflated, is because Dole is from, you know, the farming communities down there in Kansas, and you know, our governor's big on farming. He's a farmer himself, and so is Senator Grassley, and it just that farming mentality of the past 60 years. Well, we got to get our subsidies from Washington.
Yep.
And that's the only reason why he's supported and held to such a height as he is.
Well, anyway, your best guess is that it will be Dole out of Iowa.
I think so. Mm-hmm. And Buchanan number two and three, it could be Forbes or possibly even Alexander. I expect Graham to come in somewhere around fifth.
Well, that'll be the end of Graham.
Yeah, I know. And
matter of
I
fact,
started out liking Graham this year.
Well, I actually kind of like Phil Graham, too. And I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you. Any other Iowa calls would be welcome. It's a funny thing. I kind of like Graham. I sure like Graham. Alexander is also probably, Lamar Alexander is one of the better candidates. But he's just not caught fire. Buchanan's kind of catching fire. But I have disagreements with Pat. But I really like Pat. Can you understand that? I really like Pat. There are so few people out there. I appreciate his honesty, his forthrightness. He's the kind of guy you can ask him a question, and he gives you the meat. You know, he gives you a meaty, real answer. He doesn't dance. There's so many dancers running now. So I like Pat. I don't fully agree with him, but I like him. Bob Dole, he dances. Bob Dole has not caught fire. If Bob Dole doesn't come out number one in Iowa, he's had it. If Graham comes out lower than three, he's had it. Could be the death knell for others. It's going to narrow down very quickly. I think that Mr. Forbes demonstrated a temper yesterday that's going to lose him an awful lot of votes. We'll be right back. Card line, you're on the air.
Good morning, Rick Meister, Gerhardt in Oakland, California.
Good morning.
I have to agree with Mr. Radio Free America that Bill Clinton's bodies are digging themselves out of the ground as we speak, and they're going to close in.
All right, I'm not going to be willing to put up with a repeat of yesterday, Rick Meister.
Rit, R-I-T-T. Now, I won't attempt to explain to you what I tried to explain to you yesterday. I'll send that to you in a letter.
Okay? Oh, that's fine.
That's history.
That's
okay?
Fine.
I'll explain history to you.
Be sure in the letter to supply me with the proof of the allegations you're talking about, okay?
No problem.
I'll look forward to that.
Now, Mr. Clinton is unreelectable. He was elected with 43% of the popular vote.
Correct.
And that was before the damage that he did with NAFTA, GATT, the Brady Bill, all these dead Americans coming back from overseas and all these various countries where we had...
Well, Mr. Meister, one little question.
Yeah.
You say not electable.
Unreelectable.
Whatever. Mr. Meister, all the polls show that no matter which Republican candidate you pit against Bill Clinton wins. So, what do you mean?
Well, what I mean is these polls are full of it. I mean, it's like
these
polls might as well be selling, you know, phony angel photographs and Bigfoot howls and silliness like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking politics here. I have yet to be wrong on politics.
Well, I don't know your record, so I can't really verify that. It's like saying,
Bill Clinton.
Every time I step up to the bat, I hit a home run.
Bill Clinton is damaged goods, and just how damaged he is.
Yeah, but that's in that's in Meister's mind. And
no, it's not, sir. It is in the public's mind.
Well, okay. Well, see, you know, end of conversation. The public's mind is revealed reasonably accurately in the polls. Now, I'm not saying I like them. I'm just saying that I believe them. And, Mr. Meister, you choose to say they are all baloney. As you seem to suggest, much else is baloney. For example, my angel picture, I think not. I think it's a damn good one. And as far as my Yeti yell is concerned, I'd hold on to that like gold. Anyway, the polls do say that. That doesn't mean he's going to be reelected, but it flies in the face of what you just told us. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. How are you? This is Tom. I'm calling from Loveland, Colorado.
Excellent. I'm very well, Tom. Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to thank you personally because I did the fresh cut flower carnation thing.
Oh, yes.
And you are so right, my friend. You brought joy and sunshine to a very sweet lady's heart, and just wanted to personally thank you for that. It was a wonderful idea, and I'm glad I did it.
Well, we check out our advertisers. It is a good deal, yeah.
It was amazing because her feedback was verbatim. I mean, she loved everything about them, the massive quantity, the way they looked, and it was great. I had one question pertaining to tonight's topic, though.
All right.
In terms of mail order gold, I'm such a skeptic. How do I know or how do I check out that I didn't get back, like, gold-plated lead?
Well... When you buy, for example, a double eagle, which is a U.S. Mint $20 gold piece,
correct?
You get one solid ounce of gold, period, flat out, no mistaken, nothing shady about it. It's a coin.
Well, I know, but I mean, I get it in the mail. It's just a hunk of gold, or something that looks like
just a hunk of gold. Well, you can always take it down to a coin dealer.
Uh-huh.
Or an assayer, and they will quickly verify what it is for you.
Okay, well, all right. Well, again, I owe you big, and I appreciate your show. I love listening to you.
Thanks for the call, sir.
Yes, sir.
Take care. Sure. That is when the U.S. printed real, honest-to-God, gold money. $20 gold pieces. A real, solid ounce of gold. Art Bell, hello again. Now, here's a weird one for you. This is the Crow... in Wenatchee. Art, did you know I can hold my breath for 4.5 minutes without having to take a breath? Swimming is one of my favorites. Now on to my point. I'm beginning to get weird visions. They're frightening me. They're not always pleasant. I saw my death, a real death, total inky blackness. Well, sir, see, if you hold your breath for 4.5 minutes, you're going to see inky blackness. I'm also starting to have strange experiences with electronic devices. Check this out. Lately, I've been able to say what song is going to be played on the radio before I turn it on. I've also noticed that when I don't like a show or an ad on TV, the white noise and snow becomes unbearable. This is the first time something like this has happened to me. Do you have any advice for me? You remember a girl named Carrie? This sounds like a guy named Carrie. Remember Carrie? Sir, I don't have any advice for you. I would stop holding my breath for 4.5 minutes. That's as far as I'm willing to go, and people who do that tend to see inky blackness. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art. How are you?
Fine.
This is Bob from San Diego.
Yes, sir.
And this weekend on Dreamline, you're going to have the Bigfoot.
That's right.
Cool. I've been waiting for
Well, I mean, I'm not actually going to have Bigfoot here, but yes, this weekend we're going to be talking about Bigfoot. Let's put it that way. Hey, can you hold?
Sure can.
All right, well, I've got a break, and I've got to do Maria, so here she is.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Shadows painting on faces, traces, a romance in our heads.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 9th, 1996.
Somebody from the County of Los Angeles, Department of the Coroner, This is actually from the Department of the Coroner. Coroner's office in L.A. Says, Art, no way does that guy... It's on, you know, it's on stationary here. Art, no way does that guy hold his breath for 4.5 minutes. If he did, he'd no longer be here with us. Lieutenant Mike. Oh, right on, Mike. In my view, he'd be there with you. 4.5 minutes. You know, I mean, if he wonders why his life is getting strange and he holds his breath for 4.5 minutes, Mike, you and I are on the same page here. That's actually from the coroner's office in L.A. Cool. You're back on the air again. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, we were talking about Bigfoot, Art.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's another North American creature that I want you to know about. We got it in captivity in the White House. It's called Big Nose.
Big Nose, yeah. they're going to have to put wheels on it the way it's going.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's another thing I want to talk about.
Well, too. Just one moment. You know I'm going to be dragging this one out Sunday.
Yeah, but for Big Nose, though, we're going to need like one of those people that blow their nose and it sounds like a trumpet. Yeah, all right, I want to talk to you about that one guy that calls the show all the time, or actually bothers it. His name Charlie Liberace.
Oh, yeah.
It's another Big Nose. You're talking, you had Mama-san on the line last week.
You know, some of those people actually do their cause, whatever their cause is, great harm with the kind of calls they make.
Yeah.
They just make asses of themselves, and they probably have a devoted cause that they really want, and they're trying to drive home a point. It's just that they're being so ridiculous about it that they harm their point.
Oh, yeah. He, Mama Sal was on the line last week.
Yeah.
And he said you were a knuckle dragger. I don't see where he got that from. I mean, a butt dragger calling someone a knuckle dragger.
All right, sir. Thank you. Another way of getting another shot in. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello there. Going once, twice, gone. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Art, I made it?
You made it.
Oh, Art, you're kidding me.
No, I wouldn't kid you. Where are you?
I've been trying for 2 years. I'm calling from Vermont.
For 2 years?
For 2 years. Well, I was down in Connecticut listening to WAVZ.
Right.
And then, Art, I've gone crazy. I moved up by the mountain. I lost you for 3 months. Thanks to Bob Crane, that wonderful crew, I got my 818.
Uh-huh.
And then I found out now I'm listening to you on satellite. I can get 5 hours of your show.
That's true.
Oh, Art, your book, it was fabulous.
Thank you.
Anybody that can blow up the backyard, jump off the barn,
yeah,
and save those Amerasians.
All right, now don't be telling video. don't be telling them all about it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just very excited that I got through to you. I really can't believe it.
Well, as a matter of fact, soon we will be on WELI in New Haven.
Oh, really?
Yeah, making a bit of a
change.
Well, I
travel a lot, so I take my newsletters with me, and I pick up. You know, I'm always hitting the station. Art, I wanted to say, too, about Pat Buchanan. I think he's a breath of fresh air, and that idea of him being vice president?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be great?
Not a lot of Buchanan supporters think so, but I'm a pragmatic kind of guy, and I think that Buchanan actually would be a great vice president for Dole.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I really miss Colin Powell. When we lost him, I felt such the leadership that we really needed in this country, or someone that could direct that anyway. We lost it totally.
You know who I wish had run? Schwarzkopf.
Me too. I love him too.
I really, really
love him. My father-in-law was in Vietnam in the Guard, and he's made a career out of it, and mm-hmm. he really liked him too.
All right, sir. Well, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. I'm glad you finally got through, and it's getting to the point now in the country where you can hear us just about any place. Yeah, Schwarzkopf. Every time I see Schwarzkopf, I like him more. I wish he had decided to run. Oh, well. west of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Andy. I'm from Oregon.
Hello, Andy.
I live about 7 miles from Portland where it flooded.
Right. Well, it didn't flood, though. Portland is safe.
I mean where it flooded. I didn't mean Portland. I meant where it flooded.
Oh, I see. Yes. Well, and, what do you want to tell us?
Oh, I want to tell you that there's no water where I am, but there's a couple places that are flooded a couple miles from here.
There's no water?
You mean
you're not flooded?
The Lake Oswego.
Yes.
West Lynn, Oregon City. I used to live there, but I just moved out here in Clackamas, and this place didn't get any water.
Well, aren't you glad?
Yeah.
Hit the high ground. That's good. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Radio Free America.
Well, good morning.
Morning, Art. White House planned to groom SNL witness. Beverly Bassett Schaefer, the former Arkansas Securities Commissioner,
right,
approved a proposed stock sale designed to keep Madison Guaranty Savings alone afloat.
Yep.
Republican critics have suggested that Hillary Clinton, then the First Lady of Arkansas as well, as an attorney for Madison, used undue influence. And then it goes on to say, important, and if we blank expletive this up, we're done. I'd say that someone's trying to strong-arm Ms. Bassett into lying for the First Lady.
Well, that could be. There's an awful lot of rickety walls getting ready to fall in on the White House. I'll tell you what, though. I'll bet you they managed to hold most of this off until after the election. Want to bet?
I don't think so. I tell you what, they've got Guerin now. I mean, popped out of nowhere after it's been subpoenaed for 2 years, and Icky's implicated.
I know.
I think that they're going down, Art.
Do not underestimate the power of delay.
Yeah, but this story ran national. It didn't just pop up in the Washington Times. It ran national, so I'd keep an eye on this thing. I think they're going to get him.
I'll do it, sir. Thank you. Well, maybe not. If I were a betting man, other than on football, I would put my money on his being able to delay any real difficulties until after the election. That's where my money would go, because I know the power that can be wielded from the White House. Not to necessarily forestall something forever, but to keep it buried past a certain date, remarkable things can be done. God, I'm getting so cynical. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes. I have a question.
All right.
I was listening to your, not your show, but the show right after yours in the morning. And, they were talking about,
Where are you, sir?
I'm calling. I'm from Sacramento. Sorry.
Sacramento. So it must be whatever comes on KST, after me.
Okay. It was on, the decriminalization of, marijuana, and I'd like to know what are your views on that. What do you think?
That I believe that it should be decriminalized.
And what are your basis behind that?
It is my belief that marijuana is probably less harmful than alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
That marijuana, when it is included with the other drugs that really are a problem, cocaine, heroin, PCP, designer drugs, all the rest of those, LSD, that we damage our own credibility when we tell our youth that it's in the same class with those other drugs, because that's just it's a lie.
Right.
And so we actually damage our own drug war because, you know, some little tyke takes a couple of hits off a joint of marijuana,
mm-hmm,
and says to himself, damn, I'm still alive. My brains aren't fried. I seem to be okay. They lied to me.
Right.
Well, that makes it a whole lot easier for that little guy to suppose then that he's been lied to about other drugs, including cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Trouble is, first time he puts a bunch of that up his nose, all of a sudden it's too late.
He's hooked.
Yeah.
He ended up getting hooked.
So what I want to do in America is tell the truth about the relative dangers. I mean, there's danger to any drug you use. Tobacco,
mm-hmm,
alcohol,
right,
marijuana, and all the rest of them. But we should, but the dangers are relative, and we should tell the truth.
Right.
That's all. That's my position.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello. I'm so glad I'm here.
I'm glad you're there, too.
And I wanted to say I'm very grateful you exist, and I have two questions.
All right.
One is the bumper music, and it goes something like Romeo and Juliet. Mm. I'm just wondering who sings that.
You're beginning to get hooked on that, are you?
Yes.
That's the Blue Oyster Cult.
Ah, band from yesterday.
That's right, from yesteryear.
And one more question.
Okay.
If you could be in a room with anyone from history, from living or be they already passed on,
mm-hmm.
what three people would you choose and why? And you don't have to answer tonight, but I'm just curious.
Shannon Doherty.
Okay, that's one.
the MCI girl.
Uh-huh, that's two. Nobody like Gandhi or anybody?
Well, let me think about number three. I mean, I had to get the important ones out of the way, and maybe Gandhi would be three, or, you know, George Washington, or I don't know.
Well, I'm very grateful that you're out there for us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care. You know, I don't know who would. It's a good question for the rest of you. I really don't know. I would have to consider that question to answer it, honestly. But even after a thoughtful moment of a deep reflection, it still might be Shannon out front. See, I say these nice things, even though she's probably not going to do an interview with me. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Yes, Art.
Hello.
How are you doing? This is Steve from San Diego.
Steve, yes, Steve.
Yes, I just had a quick question. If you had your choice, I think you might have had a caller call you up earlier tonight. If you had a choice to talk to a certain person, that certain person for me would be God or Jesus.
All right, fine. Suppose God was there.
Uh-huh.
God was talking to you. God said, look, guy, go ahead, ask your questions. What would you ask God?
What would I ask God?
That's right.
Well,
you're the one who brought it up, so what would you ask him?
I would ask him, why are you putting such turmoil on all of us here in the earth?
I am not.
Yeah.
As I have given you free will, God might say, I have given you random occurrences.
Yes, that's true.
How you handle them determines your ultimate the ultimate fate of your soul. How's that?
That sounds good.
Wow.
But
anything else you want to know?
Well, I mean, what would you say to the, to
I just did.
Okay.
That was not God, that was Art Bell, believe me.
All right. And I do enjoy your show.
Well, I enjoyed your call. Thank you. That was fun. What would you ask God? Ooh, that's a good topic. What would you ask God? Very good question. What would you ask God? Anybody have one answer for that? That is, while we're still here on Earth. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Mr. Bell. This is Debbie from Gardena.
Hi, Debbie.
How are you?
Fine.
Good. Something kind of weird, and then I got a question for you.
All right.
I had been trying to get KABC to come in all night long. I didn't even get your station until 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I know. What happened is there's been a power problem in Los Angeles, and I've been getting a million faxes about it. Apparently KABC was off the air for a time, and there was some kind of power surge or failure, and they had a problem with their transmitter.
Because we've had, you know, pretty nice weather and everything. There's no storms. And
well, sometimes power problems happen all on their own.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, also, since everybody's asking you questions here,
mm-hmm.
If we all found out Hale Bopp was going to hit the earth and we all had 1 hour to live, what would you do in your last hour?
Talk it in.
Pardon me?
Talk it in. I'm serious. In other words, if of course we'd know, we would have, I would hope, more warning than an hour.
I would hope so too.
That way you could do several consecutive shows on it. But, given only an hour, I'd talk it in. I'd go on the air and, report on as it came in.
That's a good answer because you would be the first person I would turn into.
That actually is what I would do.
Yeah, there was some movie about that, too, not too long ago, where the meteors all came to Earth.
Oh, it was.
It was like that.
What was the name of that? That was one of the best. I've got it on tape.
Really? Because I was going to see if any of your callers knew where I could get a copy of that. I can't find that anywhere.
That's right, and I don't think you're going to be able to. I made it a point to tape it. The heck was that called? Doggone it.
Oh, I don't know. I've been racking my brain.
It was one where we blew up one of them, and then we blew up two of them, and then the very end of it was where there were zillions of them coming down.
Yeah, oh, that was... One awesome show.
Wasn't it, really? I thought it was one of the best science fiction works done on television ever.
Yep, I was just glued to my screen the whole time. That was
They did it so realistically. You know, thank you. I'll rewatch that this weekend. That's worth a watch.
Okay, and if anybody knows where I can get a copy of this, I would love to know.
Okay, thanks. Thing of it is, I hate that expression. It was a television production. It was done for television. Therefore, I'm not sure of its status on videotape. And I've not seen it on videotape, so it may not have been released and may not be. You know what else I've got a copy of? You want to really be envious? I've got a copy. Somebody sent me a copy of The High and Mighty with John Wayne. That is impossible to get. This guy taped it, apparently, back when it ran one time on television. And that movie is not in release, has not been released, and it is one of my prouder possessions, The High and the Mighty, by John Wayne. My friend, thank you. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Art.
Yes.
Wow, I'm listening to the delay. That's too weird. The radio's off. I actually got through to you. I had to get this call through, Art. I've been listening for over a year. My name's Terry, by the way.
Hi, Terry.
I'm in Portland. I listen on the mighty 1190 KEX here in the Willamette Valley.
It is
I
mighty.
I absolutely love your show, dude, but I'm a little upset with you because you are doing the talk show I had planned on doing.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I took your dream?
Well, I know, but you see, you've been doing it longer than I had figured out that this is what I wanted to do.
Oh, I see.
So I can't really say that you stole the idea from me, you know, seeing as how we've never met. But, oh, dude, you'll be here the 16th of March?
I will.
Oh, man, I'm going to be there with bells on. You can bet on it.
Well, I'll look forward to it. And look, live your dream. I mean, if you really want to do talk radio, pick a place and go do it. Start doing it.
Whatever I do, okay, as far as, you know, my show, right, it won't be Art Bell's show. I mean, it might be like Art Bell's show, but it won't be Art Bell's show. It'll be my show.
That's right.
But Art, really, man, I mean, like, I've been listening to talk radio all my life, okay? Big fan of Larry King's, big fan of Tom Snyder's. Dude, you've just really got something going there.
Kind of you. I hope so. Yeah, I think I do, actually.
We'll see you the 16th.
All right, my friend. Take care.
Okay, Art.
See ya. I think I do. It's becoming fairly obvious to me. But we're going to leave it alone. Not change it. Let it be whatever it is and let it go wherever it's going to go. And I am thankful to the man up there, all of you, that it has gone, you know, that it's gone nuts the way it has. I try not to think a lot about it. I try not to let it affect me. And I'm going to just keep doing that. So we'll see. I mean, who knows where these things are destined to end up? The only thing I know for sure is not on TV. And somebody sent me a fax a little while ago and said, you know, Art, when you do your book signing, you're going to have to let the TV station in that sent you the whale story. And that one really went to work on my conscience. I might have to do that. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Ralph from Fairbanks.
Fairbanks, Alaska. Yes,
yeah.
Ralph. How you doing?
Real good. Like your show. Been listening for quite a while.
Thank you.
And I was wondering, do you know what Mr. Forbes' stand is on gun control?
No. I've heard rumors that he is for some form of gun control, but then I've heard he stands solidly behind the Second Amendment. So I can't honestly tell you I know. It's one of those things where I've heard both.
Okay, that's all I wondered.
All right, well, I appreciate the call. I wish Wish I could give you a more definitive answer, but it just hasn't come our way. East of the Rockies, it looks like you're going to get the opportunity this morning. Where are you calling from?
Sikeston, Missouri.
Where?
Sikeston, Missouri.
Well, look, you get the honors. Do you know what the honors are?
No, sir.
You get to say goodnight, America.
Good night, America.
From Missouri, a great big goodnight, America. From the high desert, Dreamland, comes up this Sunday, Sasquatch Talk. Then the regular show. Goodnight, America.